Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. A brief programming reminder for Big Brother fans. We will be doing, I should say it's currently scheduled. The Big Brother cast assessment podcast is currently scheduled. However, considering CBS is doing a live move-in for Big Brother, we do not know as of now if we are going to do the cast assessment on time or if we will just save it for the first podcast after the premiere. So stay tuned to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE for any updates on that. As things become clear, we'll probably have a definitive date set for that. But I believe the tentative date right now is the 28th, which may always be changed. So if anybody's looking on, any Big Brother fans are looking on Missy AE's Blog Talk Radio schedule and seeing the 28th book, chances are it's probably not going to stay that way, but we will see as everything moves on here. However, also another reminder, if you guys haven't done so yet, you can subscribe to the Missy AE podcast by going to the Blog Talk Radio link, blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE. You can also go to any of our podcasts, any of our major podcast networks, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and so on and so forth. If there's a major podcast network, chances are we're probably on there. We have a lot to get to tonight. We have to take a look at the MLB trade deadline, which will be coming up. Who will be buyers? Who will be sellers? We will be taking a tiny bit of a look at the MLB draft as well, as quite a few surprises took place in round number one of the MLB draft this past week. We will discuss that. The NBA in-season tournament, I meant to get to this last week, but we will get to it tonight with the new NBA in-season tournament officially being put into effect, plus a couple of various NHL tidbits and everything, and we'll probably talk about MLB All-Star Weekend, I guess. There's a lot of stuff that we have to get to. So, anyways, if you want to call in, the number is 657-383-1308. For some reason, I was about to use my phone number for some reason. I don't know why. Anyways, it is 657-383-1308. We will be live for the next 2 hours before we go into the hour after show. So if you guys want to call in, you guys basically have a 2 hour window to do so. We currently have Diane, Lou, Kyle, and Alex on the line with us currently. How's everybody doing tonight?
All right, Steve, thanks.
Good.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Great. Great.
All right.
Hanging out.
I'm sorry. What was that, Kyle? You don't like baseball?
I'm great. I didn't say that. Whoa. Steve is trying to get me in trouble already. Dang. 8 minutes for shows. Wow.
Well, you said, MLB, I'm hanging up, so.
But where's the money? Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Oh, man.
Oh,
busted.
I mean, go Rangers, I guess. You know, I got to say go Rangers. You know, I'm in Dallas, so I don't want to get my butt kicked too much. Marty, it's already enough. I'm an Eagles fan.
Yeah, possible World Series. Possible World Series, Tim.
fanatic.
Hey, not pop. Hey, but we wasn't from the NFC. Come on, it's Beatles. Come on, you know that.
All right. So we do have a lot. We do have a lot to get to. We are going to get to Major League Baseball. The first thing I want to get to, though, is it's actually outside of the sports world a little bit, the normal sports world, I should say. As people may remember, the doctor of the gymnastics team named for Team USA, named Larry Nassar.
Oh, God.
He was convicted of sexual abuse for sexually abusing young athletes for Team USA under the guise of medical treatment so many years ago. Well, apparently, he was assaulted inside a federal prison in Florida earlier this week, according to two sources familiar with the incident. He was stabbed a total of 10 times. Twice in the neck, twice in the back, and six times in the chest.
Wow.
And luckily for him, corrections officers were able to get to him in time, and he is listed in stable condition. He's been serving a 60-year sentence for federal child pornography charges, and on top of all the other stuff, too. The sexual abuse of young athletes and everything, but according to a statement from the Bureau of Prisons on Sunday, July 9th at approximately 2:35 p.m., an inmate was assaulted at the United States Penitentiary Coleman 2 in Sumterville, Florida. Responding staff immediately initiated life-saving measures. Staff requested emergency medical services and life-saving efforts continued. An internal investigation into the incident is underway. The inmate, who a source familiar confirmed is indeed Nassar, was transported to a hospital for treatment. In addition to his federal prison sentence, he was sentenced in a Michigan state court up to 175 years in prison after more than 150 women and girls said in court that he sexually abused them over the last two decades. He ended up pleading guilty to seven counts of criminal sexual conduct in Ingham County in Michigan, and he admitted to using his trusted medical position to assault and molest girls under the guise of medical treatment. So a total of 156 women gave victim impact statements in court describing how they went to Nassar to receive treatment for sports injuries only to be sexually assaulted and told it was a form of treatment. Many of the women said when they spoke up about the treatment, they were ignored or their concerns were brushed aside by organizations in power, primarily USA Gymnastics and Michigan State University, where Nassar was the gymnastics team doctor, as well as the U.S. Olympic Committee. And, of course, as people remember, back in 2021, victims of Nassar did reach a settlement with USA Gymnastics, the U.S. Olympic Committee, and their insurers for a total of $380 million. And the settlement was part of the USA Gymnastics plan to exit bankruptcy as the organization has struggled to recover from the Nassar scandal.
Wow.
So, I mean, just to start off here.
Yeah.
It just seems like this was basically karma.
Yep.
This was karma long overdue. What are your thoughts, Alex?
Yeah, sorry, guys. I know sometimes I'm a little bit zealous, to put it nicely. Sometimes I apologize. But, yeah, just this particular topic was definitely something I wanted to kind of – I was chomping at the bit as you gave a great dialogue on what unfolded. I mean, you literally stole a great word that I used maybe too much, but I was thinking of that the whole time, karma. It's one of the most egregious crimes ever. It's one of the ultimate sins and, you know, helpless people that entrusted him. And kind of shades the Sandusky, too, where there was a cover-up. People looked the other way. It was just awful. And not to sound too dark or morbid, but oftentimes in prison, when it comes to people who touch kids or children or women, the guards will help. The guards will help make sure they get treated a certain way, and they will. They'll walk down the hallway and leave a cell unlocked and say, "Hey, go get them," and they'll ignore any calls for help. So usually, a guy like that, a scumbag like that, will be targeted in prison. So I'm surprised that they even helped him and saved his life. Oftentimes, people like that, they get killed. They get what's coming to them in prison. On the inside, it's more dangerous on the outside for them. So, yeah,
you know,
hopefully next
I'm
time.
Wondering
I'll close
that.
I'm wondering if it was more than
one person, though.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I mean, then I'm surprised they didn't you know, end it.
Because, I mean, twice in the neck, twice in the back, and six times in the chest. I mean, I understand the chest part, but him also getting stabbed twice in the neck. First off, if you're getting stabbed in the neck, how the hell are you still alive?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And again, we're not trying to sound like Fangoria or like, you know, get too nasty, but this is a real life topic. And yeah, I mean, when it comes to something like that, everyone on the call knows. I mean, that's one of the most dangerous areas. So, like you said, I mean, that's usually, not to sound too weird, but yeah, that's when really the blood really flows. So that's amazing that he survived a neck wound. Two of them? That's crazy.
Do you think maybe they didn't go all the way through the neck?
They said specifically, if anything, it must have missed a major artery because they said specifically it was two times he had two wounds in the neck, two in the back, and six different wounds in the stomach or in the chest, I mean.
Do you think ten different people could have gotten all of it?
I mean, I don't know.
Was it a group of people? Is that confirmed, or was it one person or a group of people? Was it a cellmate or?
It hasn't been said. It hasn't been said whether it was. What was it? A group?
It happens a lot. It happens a lot, man. And those guys are seriously targeted in there. Because once people find out why you're in there, again, I'm not trying to sound like an expert, but I'm a big true crime fan and like unsolved mysteries, and I watch a lot of trials. I've always had an appreciation for like law and justice, I guess, as a subject. It's a big interest of mine. You know, if I'm reading sports, I can read about like unsolved cases just as often. So I take interest in stuff like this, and apparently, I mean, a person like that, once you're discovered and once they find out why he's in there, I mean, literally, people are just like, oh, can I kill him? Should I kill him? Like, they get props. Like, they want to be the person who ends a person like that.
He's
marked for death. He's marked for death.
Yeah. Wait a minute. There is an update. So one of the – a member of the prison union named Joe Rojas, who has worked at the Sumterville Federal Prison for nearly 30 years, has told an insider that he confirmed the incident with the staff. And according to Rojas, the stabbing occurred after Nasser made a lewd quip to another inmate while watching a women's Wimbledon tennis match. As Nasser, according to the suspected attacker, Nasser told him, "I wish there were girls playing." And that alleged comment then sparked the attack.
That's a sore subject, pardon the pun. Like, yeah, that's one thing that guy should not even be hanging out with people. And then to do that, he kind of made his own death grave. Almost. He almost made his own grave with that comment. I'm surprised he's mingling with other people. Sometimes they'll be so cowardly and they'll demand through the state, you know, through attorneys. Everyone, they definitely have too many rights, some of these sickos. But anyways, they'll usually request to be in confinement somewhere else, not in general population. So it's surprising that this guy is hanging out with other inmates that I'm pretty sure most of them want him dead. So how long has he been? When did he first go away? It's been like 5 years he's been in. I'm surprised he's still alive.
Let me double check.
I can look it up.
It was...
I can look it up too, Steve. I didn't mean to take you off topic, but yeah, I'd be curious to know. I mean,
yeah.
People like that normally don't. I mean, look at Dahmer. Dahmer went pretty quickly. I mean, people like that, they tend to.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Who's Dahmer?
So he was indicted back in 2016.
So yeah, six, seven years, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, about seven years he's been in prison. Or
wow.
It'll be 7 years in November.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
And
who is he now?
He's the former gymnastics coach for Team USA Gymnastics. Or not the coach, but the former doctor for Team USA Gymnastics. And he basically sexually assaulted multiple women and girls who were...
Oh, the name of Dr. Nasser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry Nasser was his name. And, or is his name, I should say, technically. He's still alive. And it also states here that when Nasser was stabbed, several inmates jumped in to pull the attacker off of Nasser before staff arrived. And Rojas added that, you know, if people are wondering why wasn't staff right upon that, it was added that staff are directed not to intervene in the middle of a fight because it could be a ruse to attack the employees. So that's why they had to wait for backup in order for them to jump in there and separate everybody.
Hopefully gets taken care of next time.
Well,
and what's interesting, though, is that Nasser was assigned to a programming unit designated for those with mental illnesses and pedophiles. And also, the doctor or the member of the union said that he was shocked to hear of the attack because inmates in the unit often protect each other, are quiet, and don't socialize with the general prison population.
So he requested, he got put in a different section from a lot of the people that would really want him dead then.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of shepherd, and I guess they kind of stock up the same sickos in one specific area, if you will. So it's like, they look to the left and right, and there's people just as disgusting as they are. But, it's disgusting. And I think it's pretty ridiculous too that they should get that safety too because they hurt and destroyed so many people's lives. Why should they be protected? Put them in the regular population. Let them see what happens. Whatever.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely.
I don't want to make a whole crime thing. I'm not trying to spout too much on it, but yeah, it's one of those things that really irks you. And kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah. Lou, what do you think about this? Because doesn't it kind of seem like this was basically karma long overdue?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Especially for a scumbag like Nasser. Yeah. I think this was a group effort, stabbing 10 times. I think it had to be more than just one person responsible for the stabbing. For that.
Apparently, from what I'm reading here, it's only one person. It's only one person, apparently, from what I'm reading here. So maybe they haven't found the other person yet, but I've heard it's from what I'm reading here, it's only one person.
This guy's like a smaller – I just want to say this guy's a little bit older now. He's like small and scrawny. Yeah. We're not talking about going after like an NFL player. I mean, it could have been one guy. There's people out there, and again, we're not dealing with angels in there. There's some sick people inside, and you'll see people that get stabbed 60 or 70 or 80 times by one person. I mean, it's a crazy world sometimes, but I don't know if it was maybe it was one guy. I don't know. They got to have cameras. I mean, they have to be able to tell the public pretty soon what happened.
And also it says here, according to the New York Times, an official with knowledge of the incident had said that Nasser was in a general population unit at the time of the attack. So this didn't happen in the area that he's normally in.
This happened in general population. Probably over there going to watch Wimbledon, apparently. He wanted to probably watch the sports, and that's why he was with that crowd in that specific time.
Now, this isn't the only time he's been attacked, though, because he was previously attacked back in 2018 at a federal prison in Tucson. And then he was then briefly placed in a prison in Oklahoma before he got transferred to the current penitentiary that he's at. So he's probably going to be then transported again to a different prison following this now. So,
okay. What prison do you think he's going to be transported to?
No idea. He's got to be locked up in maximum security. He has to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, the inmate has been identified as Shane McMillan, who has been previously convicted of assault correctional officer at a federal penitentiary in Louisiana back in 2006. And also attempting to stab another inmate to death at the federal Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado, back in 2011. So the guy that attacked him does have a history of attacking others. Also, in regards to Nasser's condition, he does have a collapsed lung. So there is that. Obviously, you know, he's probably going to be, like I said, he's probably going to be transferred again.
I hope he dies soon. Yeah.
But let me bring in Kyle into this, though. Kyle, we've been talking about the Larry Nassar stabbing. Larry Nassar, if you don't remember, was the former gymnastics team doctor for Team USA, who is now in prison for pretty much the rest of his life for sexual assault. What are your thoughts, Kyle, on him being stabbed 10 different times in prison?
So I've never been to prison. I don't know jail life, you know, but from what I've seen on, you know, platforms and people talk about it, you know, there's things you don't do in prison. You know, you don't snitch. You don't touch little children. You don't touch, you know, young adults who are not of age yet.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I mean, trust me, like, I'm all for an eye for an eye and stuff like that. You know, I'm kind of glad, man. You know, I can only pray that he's okay, but, hey, you kind of got what you deserve, you know? That's, you know, you can go on and on about athletes and, you know, Aaron Hernandez and what he did and blah, blah, blah. But, dude, like, like I said, I don't know about, you know, prison code that well, but I know if I ever end up in prison, I'm definitely not going to be on charges for doing what he did, you know. So, you know, I definitely hope he's okay. But, you know, hey, you kind of got what you deserve, buddy. You know, you mess with the bull, you're going to get the horns, you know. You play with fire long enough, you're going to get burned, you know. You know, I'm like, dude, like, kind of good. I mean,
burned.
You know, good. I mean, good. Like I said, I hope he's okay. But hey, like, good for them in prison. I mean, they don't take no shit. You know, like I said, I don't
also,
like swearing too much on the show.
Like a dark topic.
Just to sort of add on to it, because I know Kyle, you weren't on the line when I said the reason why. Apparently he made a comment in general population because he's normally not in general population. He's in another wing that's reserved for mental illnesses and pedophiles, but he was sitting in general population and they were watching a women's Wimbledon tennis match. And apparently he said that I wish there were girls playing, like young girls.
Right.
And that's what then caused the inmate to stab him.
Good. I mean, good. Think about it. Think about it. It's probably an inmate child. I mean, not their child directly, but that's how they think in prison. They go, oh, you know, you mess with a little girl, That's my daughter. That's someone's little girl. That's someone's baby girl. Yeah, you don't do that. Like, that's the biggest thing in prison, is you don't snitch and you don't talk about little girls or little boys like that. That's disgusting. It's no wonder why he has been differently. He's a psychopath. He needs to be locked up.
Or whenever they used to do the stabbing, I thought that stuff like that wasn't allowed in prison.
It's not allowed, but it's going to happen anyways.
It's going to happen.
Because they kind of figure, there are some inmates that figure, you know, I'm in here probably for life. What's another, you know, what's another charge on my, charge on me for?
That's the old adage of, like, if the most dangerous people are those who have nothing to lose. That's the same guy who gets arrested 35 times for attacking people in a subway in the Bronx or in L.A., I mean, or wherever. But, you know, some people just don't give a flying, you know what.
Right.
A horse of that.
You know, taking a life is like, they'll sleep well after doing something like that. Certain people are just wired a different way than us.
Yeah. Anyway, so basically you can call it karma working its way back to bite him in the ass, essentially. But moving on, though, just a little announcement, which, for boxing fans and UFC fans, they're going to love this. The fight is now official. Tyson Fury will fight former UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou under boxing rules in Saudi Arabia on October 28th.
Oh, yeah.
In what may be perhaps obviously the biggest money fight that Ngannou is probably going to ever get. And, I mean, let's be perfectly honest here. Unless he can knock out Tyson Fury is going to have a pretty easy payday in this bout, considering it's Ngannou's first boxing fight, I believe.
Yeah.
Considering he was a mixed martial artist, so it should be a pretty easy payday for the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury. Now, going over to the NHL for a second here. Oh my God, I'm getting so many notifications. Every time I get an ESPN notification, because I'm wearing earbuds. So every time I get an ESPN notification, because it's letting me know what's going on in the Revolution game in soccer.
Well, it must be an intern. They fired 94% of their employees.
Yeah, maybe. But we do have some news in the NHL, in particular involving former NHL forward Alex Galchenyuk, who has now been released from his contract with the Arizona Coyotes, in particular for an incident that happened on July 9th, where he was arrested on a number of charges, including private property hit and run, disorderly conduct, failure to obey, resisting arrest, and threatening or intimidating an officer. In particular, Alex Galchenyuk allegedly threatened to chop, and they put this in quotation marks, chop an officer who responded to the hit-and-run incident and cut out the kidneys of the officer's family members, according to a report obtained Friday by 12 News, I believe, out of Scottsdale, Arizona. He said in particular, "I will end your bloodline. One phone call and you're dead." Player's mood changed rapidly while interacting with police, and he allegedly displayed signs of impairment. Galchenyuk's father was at the scene and told officers he had never seen his son act aggressively before, the police report shows. One of the officers accused the suspect of using a racial slur towards an African-American officer during the incident. And This comes 2 weeks after he signed a 1-year deal with the Arizona Coyotes, and now, as a result, the Arizona Coyotes have announced that they are cutting Galchenyuk from their roster, basically placing him on unconditional waivers for the purposes of terminating his contract. The club will have no further comment at this time, and basically, as I said, he is facing charges of property hit and run, disorderly conduct, failure to obey, resisting arrest, and threatening or intimidating an officer. I mean, maybe he may get a second chance overseas, but yeah, his NHL career and... I mean, his NHL career was over with anyways, but his AHL career, because he played last year in the AHL for the Colorado Eagles, his North American hockey career is over with, basically, at this point.
Wow.
Crazy. Goodbye.
Time to move on.
And yeah. assuming that he never plays another game in the NHL, he leaves the NHL with totals of 146 goals, 208 assists for 354 points through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 seasons, I think. No, 11 seasons in the league. So, needless to say, moving on from that, I mean, just put it this way, that you want to talk about karma. In that case, he acted real damn quick. Some other little NHL tidbits that we didn't get to last week. San Jose, they have signed right winger Philip Zadina, formerly of the Detroit Red Wings, to a 1-year, $1.1 million deal. In an attempt to somehow resurrect his career, whether or not he can get that done, we will see. The LA Kings have re-signed their captain, Anze Kopitar, to a 2-year, $7 million average annual value extension. So Kopitar, you know, Kopitar is one of those players that people were wondering, sort of like Patrice Bergeron, will he be retiring anytime soon? Kopitar, though, he's still playing at the top of his career, at the top of his game, and he will be in a Kings. He will remain in a Kings uniform for at least the next two seasons. However, there is one team who made a pretty significant move. The Ottawa Senators have acquired forward Dominic Kubalik, along with prospect defenseman Donovan Sobrango, a conditional 2024 first-round draft pick, whichever one is the lower of Detroit or Boston's first-round picks, and Detroit's 2024 fourth-round selection in exchange for forward Alex DeBrincat. So Detroit loses Tyler Bertuzzi, and instead they bring in Alex DeBrincat, who probably may be an upgrade over Bertuzzi, if I'm being perfectly honest. So,
yeah, I think so too.
A little knock there to Don Sweeney. Everybody else is improving. What the fuck are you doing? Oh, just filling out the roster. The general manager of the Boston Bruins.
Okay.
So Don Sweeney, what the fuck are you doing? Just sitting around and signing minimum value free agents instead of, I don't know, bringing back somebody like Tyler Bertuzzi. Oh no, wait, I'm sorry. What, 1 year for $5 million was too much to bring him back. I'm sorry, that's my mistake. Even though apparently they claimed They claimed that 1-year deals apparently were never on the table.
Yep.
But elsewhere, the New York Rangers, they signed Keiondre Miller to a 2-year extension worth about $7.7 million, an average annual value of $3.8 million. He was a restricted free agent and will remain a restricted free agent when he next hits free agency in 2 years. All right. I think that's about all I have for NHL. So let's move on to let's move on to Major League Baseball. Boy, oh boy, where do we start here? You know what? Let's start with the trade deadline coming up, because there is one gigantic name who is all of a sudden now on the market. I am, of course, talking about the reincarnation of Babe Ruth himself, Shohei Ohtani.
As he has
apparently, according to John Morosi, the Angels are now in a listening mode with Shohei Ohtani trade inquiries. Suitors must be prepared to offer multiple top 100 type prospects to get into the conversation of potentially acquiring him.
Let's go.
So, Harry? I mean, if people aren't living under a rock and don't know who Shohei Ohtani is, he's basically the Japanese version of Babe Ruth.
Yes.
He can pitch, he can hit, and I mean, putting it this way, from in his major league career since he came over in 2018, 35-19 record with a 3.09 earned run average. He's batting a career .272 with 159 home runs and 413 runs batted in. Needless to say, the return package, in my opinion, may be potentially the biggest that we will have seen in Major League Baseball history.
It's going to be. He's the best player of our generation, and he's a two-position player. I mean, he's the best of both worlds. You could literally, if you're an agent or part of his quote-unquote team, part of his marketing team, you could argue he is two players for one. So, yeah, damn Skippy. He's going to get the biggest contract ever.
Yeah.
And also another thing, too, is that if he does get moved, you know, teams have to remember that he technically could be he could end up being a rental. Because, you know, if teams are going to give up this much for him, they better make sure they sign him to an extension right away. Because if he hits the free agent market, the L.A. Dodgers are expected to be the favorites to sign him.
Of course. Well, Steve, you
and
I were talking a little bit.
Isn't he a Dodger now?
No, he's an Angel.
It's the Angels.
Okay.
Well, the same city, but a different team.
Yeah, same state.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit misleading. I mean, he may be good, but he's no Angel. Oh,
Yeah, or he's no Angel like Greg Allman.
Exactly.
But, Steve, like we were saying, I love Greg Allman. But, Steve, as we were saying offline yesterday and today a little bit, I mean, it's ballsy, but, I mean, look, there's different levels and different sports involved, but you can compare it. Even, like, look, I remember Carmelo Anthony. I'm not a big Melo fan. He's not as big of an athlete. He's not close to Ohtani. But just as an example, remember the Knicks gave up, like, Gallinari in his prime and three or four other players I can't even name. They gave up a King's ransom, even as Melo said, guys, I'm from New York. I'm going to be there this summer. I'll sign. They didn't even risk it. They moved, like – half their starting lineup for him. I mean, if you're that confident, I applaud you. I would not be that confident. I would move a few key prospects right now for him just for the chance to sign him. Because if you wait until the summer, 10, 12, 14 teams might be bidding. So if you want him, yeah, you've got to pony up right now. And you have to have a handshaker, a knowledge that he's going to re-sign.
Right. And also this season, as of today, he is batting .303 with 32 homers and 71 runs batted in. As far as pitching goes, where is he pitching? Oh, boy. For some reason, it's not showing his pitching stats, but actually, he's on a bit of a oh, wait, those are batting. Let's see, pitching. He's 2-3 in his last five games, but you know, just needless to say, it's probably going to take a King's ransom in order to acquire him. Seven and five with a 3.5 ERA this year. Though a lot of that can do with the fact that the Angels absolutely suck this year. But needless to say, probably going to take a King's ransom. Like, just to give a comparison, if I'm the Boston Red Sox and I'm looking at potentially getting Shohei Ohtani, I will immediately have to give up Marcelo Meyer. I would have to give up Sedan Rafaela. I'd probably have to give up Miguel Blaze. I'd probably have to give up Roman Anthony. And
your top
on
prospect,
top of it,
Mr. Mayor, your top prospect is the first target they desire.
Yes.
That's
and
the number one. That's
the
starting point for the Angels.
Yeah, who I named, I literally just named our four top prospects.
Yeah. I mean, would you do it? Would you do it, Steve, if you're calling the shot, if you're Team Bloom right now?
I mean, if I had assurance that Ohtani would sign long term,
that's the key. Yeah,
I might because Here's my reasoning. Meyer is he's considered our top prospect. You get rid of Meyer, there's a reason why you drafted Mikey Romero last year. As, he's considered to be our second top prospect when it comes to shortstops. So, I mean, it's obvious they're in a rut right now when it comes to the shortstop position to begin with. Because, I mean, they got Kike Hernandez, who probably could be designated for assignment at any point.
They got to be better than that. They got to step that up.
You know, Marcelo Meyer, he just made it to AAA this year.
Yep.
Or no, he's with Portland, actually. Wait a minute, is he with AAA?
No, Steve, you're the guru all things Boston and Fenway, of course. Is he's 20, right? Isn't he 20 years old?
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
he
can take some seasoning. You don't want to, you know, and Lou, you don't want to break this guy's spirit. You don't want to bring him up when he's not quite ready.
Yeah.
So it might be better
right.
to wait till next year, but right now, man, they have a glaring hole there, and they're on the wild card fringe. It's kind of tempting through Boston's lens.
Well, no, if I'm bringing anybody up.
To bring him up.
If I'm bringing anybody up, I'm bringing up Rafaela.
He's a really good player.
Rafaela can play shortstop. Rafaela can play shortstop, and he can play center field.
You're 100%. 100% right. I totally forgot. I failed to acknowledge that he can play short, too. Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, they got to do something with that shortstop.
I mean, would I give up those prospects? And you would probably have to throw in Jaron Duran and maybe Brayan Bello. So we're talking like six players that they would have to put into this deal.
I think they would do just real quick, Steve. I can play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
If I was the Angels, I would give you Ohtani. If you're representing Boston, I think I'd bet $20 right now. Angels would do it if you offered Duran, awesome athletic center fielder, for the next 10 years. and Bello, possibly an ace. Mm-hmm. He's like 22. And then Mayer. Those are three really, really elite prospects. We'll get it done right now, I think. Just those three.
I think it's going to take more than those three.
They might lose.
Just being perfectly honest, I think it's going to take more than those three. I think they're going to want, basically, they're going to want a king's ransom. And I honestly, I don't think that that's enough to pry away Shohei Ohtani. You know, they would want, you put in Duran, you put in Bello, and you put in Meyer. They would want at least Rafaela they would want at least Rafaela and also another prospect on top of him.
I agree. I mean, the quickest way to look at the Rays and look at some of these teams that build out awesome rosters, the Dodgers, obviously. Seems like that. Red Sox, you know, Yankees, their best years. I mean, you start with the up the middle, right? Shortstop, catcher, center fielder. I mean, in that Boston trio, you're getting the best deal I think that Ohtani could get because you're getting a young center fielder, a young shortstop, and a young potential ace up the middle. I mean, that's a great core right there to get Ohtani, who might be gone for nothing in a few months. He might wave goodbye, and they might not get anything back for him.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm doing that deal. You want to give me four or five prospects? Definitely doing the deal. I mean,
now
the longer the Angels wait, they're going to lose leverage. They're going to get less the longer they wait.
And you know, another thing, too, is you also have to consider where the Angels are. Because right now they say they're listening, but a deal appears unlikely. You have to take into account where they are in the standings. They're at 45-47 right now. They're fourth in the AL West. They're six games out of a wild card spot. To be perfectly honest, if I know that Shohei Ohtani isn't re-signing with my club, I am dealing him, but I am looking to get the best package possible. And it says the Yankees and the Dodgers are at the top of the list when it comes to teams that would deal for him.
Good for the Yankees. The Yankees have none of those prospects at that level that you just described. They have Volpe, okay? The Sox have more young talent advantage. Sox.
Who are the Yankees have to give up in order to get those guys?
They need more good young players, which they don't have. So they're less attractive. Than the Red Sox or other teams.
You know, the minor league system that they
have. We'll give you Stanton and Donaldson. Stanton and Donaldson can't even hit a beach ball. They're useless. I mean, the Yankees have a lot of useless players. They're not into sweepstakes for Ohtani. Sorry.
Yeah, Lou, what were you saying about the Yankees?
The Yankees were an injured unit before. They had a lot of, you know, good players in their minor league soon in AA and AAA. This year, it doesn't seem to be having that same effect. I mean, yeah, you're calling up players in AA, but they're not being as effective as they were the last time at the Yankees or Rangers and still managed to win the division. I mean, you know, it's a far cry from where we were the last time.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm actually looking at their prospect pool right now, and they got Jasson Dominguez that they could probably offer, but other than that, you know, their number three and four prospects are 22 years old. Their number two prospect is 24 years old.
Florial was one of the Yankees blue chip guy. He's like 25 now. Cashman and Boone have been horrendous, I think, for the past couple of years. But whatever, it is what it is. People get mad when I call the Yankees out for what they are. But minor league system, it's not close to the Sox or the Orioles or the Rays. I mean, the entire division's lapped them. The Yankees don't have the prospects to get Ohtani.
Yeah, you know, I actually have to agree with that.
It is what it is.
I'm just looking at the list right now, and I think their only player that's in the top 100. Okay, no, they have two players in the top 100: Dominguez and Wells. But Wells is 24. I mean, honestly, you know, Wells is a catcher. He's 24. They drafted him 3 years ago. And
I don't know that much about this guy. I'm not, and again, I'm not trying to smash the Yankees. I respect the heck out of all their rings. I know they have great fans like Lou and stuff. I'm just saying, I don't know about that. The farm system just doesn't look great. I mean, this guy Wells, I do a pretty good job staying on top of minor league and big names. I don't know two things about this guy. I don't think Ohtani's gonna. I don't think the Angels are really looking at this guy. Who's Wells? He's a
catcher. I mean, I'm kind of surprised. I'm kind of surprised that this guy hasn't been able to take either Trevino or Higashioka's spot because he's a catcher.
Yeah.
So if he's not, I mean, Trevino's hitting 211, and what is Higashioka? 236. So Higashioka is actually the better of the two. But
yeah, if you combine them, they're hitting Luis Arias.
All right, going back to Boston here for a second, you take a look at who they have in the top 100. They have Marcelo Meyer at number 3, and we're talking all of baseball. Marcelo Meyer's at number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, where's the next one? Rafaela's at 82. Nick York is at 86. Miguel Blaise is at 87. And Roman Anthony just cracked the 100 just recently. So,
Steve, is York still legit? Steve, I know you're the expert on that area, like with that team. I mean, I've heard that name for a couple of years. Anytime you hear a name for years and years and they don't come up, you start to get a little skeptical. Is York legit?
I mean, he just made Double-A this year. He's still only he's only 21 years old.
Wow,
you know,
he just made
Double-A this year with Marcelo Meyer. They're basically the tandem out there at second base and shortstop, the two of them.
That's nice
for the Portland Sea Dogs. So, I mean, I would say. Say York does have a chance to make a major league roster. I mean, not right now, obviously,
yeah.
But, you know, I think he's progressing the way that Boston wants him to right now. Looking at his stats in Portland, he's batting 275, 9 homers, 38 RBIs. So, you know, and he's been in Portland all year this year. So he's still... And, you know, another thing to note is the year that he was drafted in 2021, he actually rose up to elevated single A that same year. So
I was thinking it down.
He's actually risen pretty quickly in this system.
I was thinking of Downs as that kind of older prospect that still hasn't made it, so... York, yeah, no, I was dead wrong on York. I realized that. York still has the world of potential because he's only 21. I was thinking Downs.
Downs maybe kind of
a lost cause. York's legit.
I'll tell you right now, in terms of firepower, the Dodgers have more than enough. They have like 6 or 7 different people in the top 100. I think the Dodgers, if they wanted to, They could make a bid for Shohei Ohtani today if they wanted to.
Yeah,
that's the key, and that's what I think. Me, you, and our brother, everyone on the sun has been listening to these rumors. I think that's probably going to be the destination. But again, do you wait until the summer, or do you give up 3 or 4 or 5 prospects right now to make sure he's your guy? It's really a tough debate. I mean, if you guys are the Dodgers, would you send a package right now and just make sure he's a Dodger? Or wait?
Well.
They're going to ask three or four guys.
You know, honestly, I would look at – because obviously the Dodgers are going to be one of the favorites in free agency. I would look and see, okay, our main competitor is going to be the Yankees. Yeah. So free agency. The Yankees have been known in the past to outspend other people, other teams. So put it like this. Would you want to risk potentially getting in a bidding war and losing that bidding war to the Yankees?
And also, I mean, obviously the implications of the AL East rivalry, I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot more than the average two teams. So, like, yeah, to get Ohtani is a massive death knell. It's a huge uppercut blow to the other opponents. So, yeah, it's a massive, massive move. I mean, that's how I would go out. I would be very safe. I'd give them what they want and then just walk home smiling with Ohtani. Just to make sure he's mine,
you know,
I'd give him
what
they
want. That's what I'm saying. The Dodgers, they have enough prospects to where if they were to deal for Ohtani, they would probably still have a couple of prospects left in the top 100.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, Lou, would you go Volpe and several other people to go? Would you trade basically your top tier guys, including Volpe, the top, you know, younger guys? Would you try to do that for Ohtani or not, Lou?
Volpe hasn't really been, you know, putting up the numbers like that, so I don't know if I, you know, make him. But I don't think the Angels are going to give up, you know, Ohtani so easily. You know, they're going to fight to keep him. Because without him, I don't think the Angels have much of a prayer this year.
You know what kind of, it's very sad, but to your point, I mean, what kind of did it in, though, would it's going to make it a lot harder. Like, basically now it really seems like he's leaving when Trout got injured. Because watch, they're going to flounder now. They're going to drop out of the race within the next 2 weeks.
They will.
You know what I mean? They kind of, like, just deflated their balloon. They're kind of shot.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they are six games out of the wild card. So, in all honesty, if I'm L.A. right now, I'm looking realistically at this. I'm like, okay, we know that it's probably that the Dodgers and the Yankees are probably going to be competitors for him in free agency.
Maybe the Mets.
Would we be able to outspend them? You know, would we, with us being the ones to bring Shohei originally into the United States, would we have any sort of leverage in extension talks?
Well, they could have added arms and they could have acted mature and responsible as front office people and added legit starting pitchers, which they have never done. From, you know, send Anthony Rendon, who gets injured falling out of bed, to like a $250 million deal. They've always neglected the pitchers. Trout probably doesn't want to be there. Ohtani's going to leave. Why would he want to stay there? I hate to say it. I mean, think about it. Why would he want to stay there versus going to, like, the L.A. Dodgers and being a total Elvis Presley, you know, icon? Or New York City or Boston.
And
he might go to the Mets. He might go to the Yankees or Mets. I mean, they're all going to be lined up for him. I don't think he's going to stay in Anaheim.
And by the way, that Anthony Rendon contract, that may be one of the worst contracts since Bobby Bonilla.
So bad.
Oh, boy. What a waste.
He has one home run this year, I think. It's $250 million deal.
One?
I mean, and they have Reed Detmer. I mean, they really, God bless them. I hope, you know, they have like a bunch of like number four and number five starters. No speed. I mean, what kind of blueprint do they have? Ohtani's like, this is not going to do it.
Yeah, you were close. Two home runs and 22 RBIs, batting .236.
So, I mean, so if you're Ohtani, if you can pick your destination, do you want to stay in Anaheim? The answer is probably no.
In all honesty, I would be very shocked.
Because he can get the biggest contract ever. You know, we're not talking about, like, you know, jumping for a ring chaser like, you know, Kyrie or KD, but he can go wherever he wants. I mean, I hate to say it, but Dodgers would be perfect. It is what it is.
You look at the Angels right now. Gio Urshela is out for the year with a broken pelvis. Trout is on the injured list right now. Who knows when he'll be back. Rendon just got put on the injured list with a shin injury. I mean, not like that's going to make much of a difference, but honestly, you know, if I'm Ohtani, I'm leaving in free agency. Because if your ultimate goal is to win, you're not winning in an L.A. Angels uniform.
No.
In all honesty, you're winning in a Dodgers uniform, if anything. And maybe the Yankees. If you do go to New York, maybe perhaps, yeah. You know, that could be what catapults the Yankees back into World Series favorites type of status. Now,
if Ohtani can make half the Yankees run up 200, the Yankees do a lot more than Ohtani, but yeah, it'd be cool if they got
him.
Their issues run a lot deeper than Ohtani.
As far as what you said, though, about Volpe earlier, if I'm the Yankees, I don't give him up. And
then you're
the
not
reason
Ohtani.
Being, exactly.
There's nothing to offer besides it's a non-starter. I'm sorry, just look at, if you're non-biased, if one of us is running Anaheim right now, you're looking at the different options. I mean, Volpe, and then I'm struggling to think about who else.
Well,
versus Boston,
Alex,
you've got three
the reason why I say that, Alex,
yeah.
The reason why I say that though is, okay, you get rid of Volpe. Who else do you have at shortstop?
Peraza, younger, nice middle infield, more of a defensive guy. But, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I mean, Volpe's their best young talent. Their best young talent. But, I mean, Anaheim's going to want him. That's kind of like – that's got to be a key part of the deal if I'm Anaheim.
I mean, honestly, you know, I think the road to trading Volpe, if anything, that would have been last year. If you were going to make a trade at all and trade away Volpe, that would have been last year that you would have done it.
So that good value.
He's
having growing pains. He's still a valued good commodity league-wide. I think he has a lot of popularity.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying he doesn't have value. But what I'm saying is that, you know, he's already left a mark on the Yankees right now. To where, I mean, he's batting 13 homers, 37 RBIs, .260 average.
Yep.
If you – oh, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. That's Gleyber Torres. What am I thinking? 13 homers, 33 RBIs, a .212 average. If you get rid of Volpe, I mean, yeah, you could bring up Peraza, but Peraza was batting .188 before he got sent down this year.
Anaheim's hanging up unless you include Volpe just to even start this conversation. So it's like kind of Volpe's going to be in the deal.
Yeah, I know.
If they make a deal.
I know, but that's what kind of makes me think. That kind of makes me think that New York will just wait until free agency.
Yeah, that might be smarter
if
than because their cupboard's a little bit. Their cupboard's not as stacked as maybe a Boston or like a Tampa or some. You know, their minors just aren't as deep.
Yeah. Right.
Mets have a package,
it's,
too. Mets have Alvarez, Beatty, Vientos, Parada. The Mets have the best minor league catcher, Parada, and they have the best rookie catcher, Francisco Alvarez. So catchers are kind of a hot commodity. Mets have a shot, and Senga's best friends with Ohtani. I'm just saying that they might be a little underdog. They might be able to get him, too, and they have the richest owner now, Cohen. I mean, the Mets are going to make a push for Ohtani, too. And they could, Boston, Parada's, I think he's the number one catcher in the minors, Kevin Parada.
Yeah, Parada's ranked number 40 right now for top 100.
Dude, and they can give up Alvarez, too. They're a young catcher. He's on pace for 30 home runs. I mean,
then you have Mauricio.
Yeah.
You have Mauricio at 58.
Brent
Beatty. 58. You have Jet Williams at 84.
They have prospects.
So they have three prospects in the top 100. So I could see, I do think the Mets could potentially insert themselves into the conversation.
Also,
Cleveland.
Yeah.
Cleveland has quite the haul as well.
So you wouldn't
in the top 100 list.
You wouldn't stay in Ohio. I mean, Mets can give up Alvarez and Beatty. The Mets have two starters that are 22 years old that are putting up good numbers. Those are good commodities. Like at Volpe, they're already in the league, and they're really young. So you have contract control and just development. I mean, in 3 or 4 years, Volpe could be an all-star. He could be hitting 300 in 2 years. You never know. Mets have
Do we want to think Mets for a second here and kind of think outside the box?
Sure.
Because I got an interesting team here. You want to talk about a team that is that wants to go all in?
Rangers?
How about the Texas Rangers?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Rangers. Yep.
Just listen to this. Jack Leiter. He's ranked 91 out of the top 100.
Cowboy?
Brock Porter.
Yeah, I was done.
61. You have Luis Angel Acuña.
Their best prospect, Evan Young, is the center fielder. The Rangers have a great center fielder, too, to offer. So they have all those guys.
Evan Carter, he's the number six prospect. Yeah, he's the number six prospect in all of Major League Baseball. And plus they have two players in the 40s, too. So look out, the Texas Rangers. I mean, we've seen them spend money. I wouldn't be surprised if they decided to spend a little more money and bring in the likes of Shohei Ohtani, especially if it means that, I mean, let's put it this way, the Rangers are among the top two teams in the American League as far as betting odds to make the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
So... I mean, it should be very interesting to see if LA does decide to ultimately sell Ohtani. In my opinion, I think it would be a big mistake if they didn't. But with Trout on the injured list and Urshela is out for the season, you know, there's six games off of the wild card. I honestly, and they've lost their last six games too. They're 1-9 in their last 10. You know, I just don't see LA.
We're good.
I don't see LA contending without Trout there.
No, that won't happen.
Trout's just wasting away out there from Jersey. He could be a Philly. I mean, goes to every Eagle game. Trout is just like, what am I doing in Anaheim? They should be a lot better than what they were, and I think the time's up with them. I think that the song is over with them. They're breaking up the band.
Break up the band.
Now, shifting over a little bit to the trade deadline. Trade deadline is August 1st at 6 p.m. Eastern. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation of who might get moved. I know Cody Bellinger of the Chicago Cubs is listed as one of the top deadline targets this year to potentially be moved, considering, I mean, hell, this year for the Cubs, batting .304, 12 homers, 35 RBIs, he's on pace to have his best season since 2019 when he won the MVP back with the Dodgers. So... it sounds like the San Diego Padres might be in the mix for him. It sounds like the Dodgers, you can probably rule out the Dodgers for a potential reunion with Bellinger. The Cubs, more than likely the Cubs are probably selling. So they're going to be selling a lot of pieces at this deadline. According to Mark Feinsand of MLB.com, he sees fits for Bellinger with the Cleveland Guardians, the New York Yankees, and the San Francisco Giants in potential deadline deals.
Yeah. Yankees love him. Apparently, he's got a thing for New York, too. I could see him going to the Yankees.
I mean, the Yankees would definitely make sense because they do need an injection of energy into their lineup. And right now they sit 2 games out of the wild card. Let me put it this way. I see the Yankees being more buyers than I do the Red Sox. Because right now, with the Red Sox 2.5 games out because of their epic 10-4 loss to the Chicago Cubs earlier today, I don't see the Red Sox being serious contenders. Because as I said on your show earlier today, Lou, this is where I see the Red Sox. They're going to be buyers and sellers at the same time. They're going to try and make deals to sort of sneak their way into the playoffs, thinking that they can be contenders, only to just lose most of their remaining games. And, honestly, right now they sit at 49-44. Unless they get starting pitching. Unless they get starting pitching, there's nothing that this club is going nowhere, basically.
Right.
Unless they can get starting pitching and a lot of it at the deadline, this club is going nowhere. Obviously, Tampa and Baltimore, you can expect them to be buyers. I would assume Toronto will probably jump into the buying market, potentially.
Yeah.
Considering they're in a wild card spot. The Yankees are in a wild card, they're not currently in a wild card spot, but they're in a better position, I feel, than the Red Sox. Boston, I just think it would be a mistake if they choose to add at this point, because they're still making the same stupid decisions, like, for example, putting Kike at shortstop today for him to make his 20th error of the season, it feels like, which ultimately led to a 6-run third inning for the Chicago Cubs to basically run away with the game. And I wouldn't be surprised if Kike Hernandez gets designated for assignment at some point within the next couple of days.
I think it's time's up. Especially now going into crunch time with the wild card, you cannot be wussyfooting around and starting that guy at shortstop. Sorry, it's not going to work. They got to pull that ball.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. I think that this was a decision made not by Alex Cora. I think it was a decision made by Hein Bloom, because Alex Cora is too smart to fiddle around with lineups, especially utilizing a player who he knows does not excel at shortstop and would be used better at either second base or in the outfield.
Oh, it's a joy trip to the airport.
I think this whole entire debacle with Kike Hernandez at shortstop has been primarily a Hein Bloom type of move. And I mean, in all honesty, I still believe that Kike Hernandez has value. And the reason being, because if you're a smart general manager and you put him at somewhere else other than shortstop, he actually will contribute. He actually has value in that sort of way. But, Hein Bloom deciding that he wants to be all big brain, thinking that he's smarter than everybody else. Oh, look at me. I can turn a player like Kike Hernandez into the next Brock Holt, who can play any position out there on the field. No. If I was running this team, this experiment would have been done a long time ago. And when I say done, I mean I would have pulled the plug on this experiment a long time ago. But leave it to Hein Bloom thinking that he's smarter than everybody else, and now all of a sudden, I mean, put it this way. If they designate Kike for assignment and don't get anything back for him, if they don't trade him, that would be severe mismanagement on Heim's part in terms of being a general manager.
Right.
Now,
yeah,
going over to another potential team. I'm sorry, Alex, you were going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you, saying, yeah, Chime, I mean, it's definitely a good opportunity for him to do something.
Yeah, but I know what he's going to do. He's going to buy and sell and try to outsmart everybody else, only to have fucking egg on his face again at the end of the season when players that he could have sold end up leaving in free agency, just like what happened with Eovaldi, just like what happened with Bogaerts, just like what happened with J.D. Martinez.
Three big names. Yep, proof's in the pudding. Until proven otherwise,
yeah,
probably what's going to happen. Probably what's on tap.
Now, there is one other very interesting name out there for the San Diego Padres that people believe may be on the move. The Padres, of course, sit at 44-48 right now in the NL West, 6.5 games out of a wild card spot. So they're probably going to be selling. And one name that has been mentioned is their closer, Josh Hader.
Hader, yep. Yeah. Soto,
you
want to
talk about a guy who has value.
Yeah, right. Hader, yeah. He's the top five closer in the game. Probably 29, 30 years old.
Think about this. How do you have a 44-48 record and you have a closer who has an ERA of 1.06 with 22 saves?
Here's another picture at me.
It's the Padres. You also have the Manny Machado karma where it's he's kind of lazy and then it kind of spills over and rubs off on other people and they lose 2-1 and 3-2 a lot. And Padres don't have the killer instinct. They don't have a lot of dog.
And think about it, too. With all the prospects that they gave up to acquire players like Juan Soto the last couple of years, they could offload if they assume that they're not going anywhere in this playoff, like they're not going to be in the playoffs. You trade Josh Hader, you could get a majority of those prospects that you lost back.
Of course, you could also trade Soto, but Soto's actually like the nicest guy out of that group. Sorry, like Tatis seems kind of a dick bag. Pardon my Latin. Machado is kind of like hey. He'd rather not hustle, so that's always a really good to show the younger players. I mean, yeah, they're just like a big ego team. They don't have what it takes to win the close games.
Yeah.
I would be selling.
Well, don't be surprised,
Juan Soto could
be on the move, too.
Yeah, I'm thinking Soto. He's like the one, like, consistent, like, hardworking guy, though.
Yeah. I mean, it would definitely hurt San Diego to have to get rid of them, but they're in a little bit of a logjam when you take a look at contracts.
Oh, they're all absolutely hemmed up. I mean, the Bogaerts is just like an embarrassment of riches, and it's not even winning games. I mean, we talked about this yesterday too, Steve. I mean, Bogaerts is like they had absolutely no need for him. Kim is playing great, the Korean guy at shortstop now. So Bogaerts is, like, uncomfortable. They don't even really want to play Bogaerts at short. They might DH him now. He's hitting 250 with no power, no speed. Boston was correct to cut the cord on him to not re-sign him. I mean, the Padres have just fallen distance.
That there is where I disagree with you. I would rather have Bogaerts on that contract that he signed. I would rather have Bogaerts with that contract on Boston,
true,
putting up those numbers, than I would have Kike putting up the current numbers he's putting up.
Yeah, kicking ground balls into stands. Yeah, Kike is looking pitiful.
Because at least Bogaerts, I mean, Bogaerts may commit errors, but he knows how to play shortstop.
Smart guy, too. Hard worker. And again, it's true, man. The older, I don't know about you guys, but you realize there's more than stats. I mean, look at the Padres lineup. That's a great video game lineup. In real life, they're not winning games.
Yeah.
So it's like there's a lot more to the game than just going 2 for 5. You know, you want those hustle plays, the great attitude. It carries over to the team. I mean, guys like Machado and Tatis, I don't really think they care about winning. So I think Soto's I mean, I think Soto's a championship type player. I think Bogart's obviously has proven that. So I don't even think they really fit. I'm hoping they get moved for their own sake. That is not working.
And also, to be fair for Bogart,
they don't care about winning. You know, that's not right.
It's just not right.
To be fair for Bogarts, though, he is putting up. I mean, yeah, his average is down, but he is hitting pretty close to what he did in Boston last year. He had 15 homers and 73 RBIs through 150 games. This year, through 86, 10 homers and 35 RBIs. Now, granted, 35 is low, but that could be also because of how stacked that lineup is and how teams have to maneuver that lineup now.
Also not his fault, too. Like, I'm sorry, the lineup stacked. They're not scoring runs, dude. Collective overachieving. Underachievers. They really are. Machado's having a terrible year. I mean, but all I was trying to say about the RBI thing is simply it's not Bogart's fault if people aren't really on base for him. I mean, I was looking at the lineup. They should be scoring 8 or 9 runs a game. They average like 4 runs a game.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, that's why I think if he was still with Boston, he would probably
better
have slightly better numbers.
Can you imagine that too? I mean, Boston has a much better lineup. I mean, look at the names in San Diego. Just total failure in San Diego.
Yeah, but at the same time, I wouldn't exactly say that Boston has a much better lineup, though. Because,
no.
I mean,
but I would think
you got guys.
They have younger guys, like homegrown. That was my point. I mean, San Diego's kind of like a mercenary, like a free agent rotisserie team. Just all like randomly guys coming in, making mucho bucks, just hanging out together. Boston's more like homegrown, probably a little bit more like work ethic. I don't know. That's the way I see it.
I'll tell you right now, if Boston decides to sell, this is who I expect to be gone.
Yes.
Justin Turner.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yeah, I expect Justin Turner will be gone. DK will be gone. Duvall will probably be gone. I wouldn't be surprised if Verdugo goes.
Yeah.
Ooh, still young.
Well,
yeah, but at the same time though, his you know, his trade value isn't any. It's at its highest right now.
All time high. Yeah, it might be timing. You're correct.
I would expect Kenley Jansen. May probably be gone. Maybe Chris Martin. James Paxton, I would assume, because, I mean, Paxton right now is playing brilliantly off of that injury that kept him out last year. And ever since he came back, he's been one of Boston's best pitchers. Before he got injured, I would have said Chris Sale. But because Sale got injured, probably not. So, I mean, there's a ton of players that Boston could, if they decide to sell, there's a ton of players that they could possibly offload here.
Interesting roster.
In all honesty,
they have a lot of flexibility.
Looking at this team, though, there's no way they're contending. I'm sorry.
The Kiki move is the biggest trade correction.
You know, this is something that I could see happening. I could see them deciding to stand pat and say, oh, we're going to get Chris Sale and Trevor Story back. Those are going to be our trade deadline additions. And I could still see them sucking as a result.
Yeah, it does suck.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the old Cincy GM. Oh, yeah, we added someone. We got someone back from injury. Whatever. Okay. Kind of like a halfway prize. I mean, they're getting Story back. Are you getting Colorado Story? Hell no. He looked like a 250 hitter out east to me.
Well, that depends. That depends. Yeah. Where are we going to see Story play? Is he going to play shortstop or is he going to play second?
What version of Story?
Because the plan was to have him play shortstop when he comes back.
Ugh.
And the problem
is, I mean, you're right.
He doesn't have the arm.
They should have signed Bogarts. I mean, that was weird when it happened, and it's really weird now. I remember when that happened. I mean, they added Story, and Bogarts was not happy about that, obviously. And look where Bogarts is.
Well, the thing with Bogarts is it was as long as Story would stay at second base. And Story specifically said in an interview with the media, I signed with Boston to play second base.
Good for him.
With the condition that he would never return to shortstop. So if he were to return this year, he wants to play second. And it has to do with the arm. Exactly what you're saying, Alex. It has to do with the arm.
No. And no, you always put the pieces together for me, too. Like, thank you on that. I just didn't even realize that. I mean, again, though, you get those inflated stats. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. Nolan Arenado is one of the few Rockies that ever left Rocky Mountain High and actually put up massive numbers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you see these guys that their splits are just dreadful. They leave Colorado, it's like they forgot how to hold a bat. I mean,
it's very odd.
Story looks subpar as heck last year. I don't know if he comes back now with a new arm and he's a new guy. I don't expect much from Story. I think he was just absolutely, you know, amplified. His numbers were, you know, blown up, you know, playing in Colorado. He made the most of his time there. Maximize his contract.
You know, to be fair, though, the Story wasn't that bad last year. I mean, maybe his numbers have gone down since leaving Colorado, but he wasn't that bad. I mean, I can take, for a second baseman, I can take 16 home runs, 66 RBIs. I mean, I would have liked a better average. But
that's Pedroia.
He only batted .238.
He's got talent. I wasn't trying to throw him onto the carpet. I mean, he's still got some talent. I just hope, you know, he can play a little bit better. But yeah, those are passable. Those are, you know, solid numbers. They're not egregious.
Right. I mean, it's not like I'm not expecting. Oh, we're gonna get the Colorado Trevor Story. ESPN has him listed as a shortstop, if anybody was wondering. So, if he's going to be coming back, he's going to be a shortstop, apparently.
How close is he to coming back?
My understanding is that he was expected to do a rehab assignment shortly after the All-Star break and that he would be back in a Red Sox uniform by August.
Interesting. We were talking about
that. But he hasn't started that rehab yet, though.
We were talking about a little bit yesterday, Steve, about the Turner experiment second, not long-term, not a viable answer. But, I mean, if you look at Story healthy, being a B+, you know, solid maybe 75 RBIs next year, and then you have Mayer, you have a totally new middle infield. And you have Rafaela.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of positive signs pointing out of Boston right now.
Although, to be fair, though, too, if they decide to move Alex Verdugo, I would not be surprised if Rafaela gets called up and put in right field.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because Rafaela is moving quickly up the ranks in AAA right now. So
get those guys in the lineup. Homegrown. That's
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's hard enough for these teams to sign the right players when you have someone who you've known since they were like 18 years old. I mean, homegrown is the way to go. Easier said than done, but they got to promote these guys.
Let's see. So some of the other teams I expect to be buyers. Obviously, we covered the AL East. The AL Central, I would expect that Minnesota is going to be a buyer. I'd expect Cleveland will be a buyer because, let's face it, the AL Central is completely up for grabs at this point.
Dumpster fire. Dumpster fire, yep.
I was going to say on Lou's show earlier today that I think Detroit, even despite being 40 and 50 and they're five games out, I think they still have a shot to win the Central.
They do. Detroit's calling
That division is so pathetic.
I know, guys. Hear me out, though, for a second. I'm going to build on your point, Steve. I know I mentioned it yesterday, but they also have Colt Keith as a really good second baseman, third baseman prospect, big bat coming in, like a Evan Longoria. Detroit, they're about to call him up. And then remember, Riley Green, their best young player, their best young player, center fielder Riley Green, has been out most of the year. Detroit's about to add a couple big bats. I know, whatever, it's Detroit. They could steal that. They could steal that division.
Does anybody really care to win that shit of a division?
It's like no one wants to. Yeah.
Exactly.
They're like, we'll hit the snooze alarm. We're not ready to wake up yet. Yeah, no one's really in a rush to win that pennant.
It's weird. Yeah, it's so weird that, you know.
Cleveland's the best roster pitching and defense. I mean, Cleveland is, like, underwhelming, but they have that blueprint. They always have young guys. They always have Kwan and Naylor and, of course, Handman Ramirez. They got guys that run and play defense and get on base. They're kind of like raised light. The Indians are always in the mix. And the Indians, obviously, like the Rays, they always have good young arms. They have no payroll. So the Indians are always
Cleveland's going to miss Bieber, though. The injured list
Justin
now.
Bieber's third cut.
Justin Belieber, yeah.
Shane Bieber is now on the injured list, and
no more
who knows how long he's going to be on there. So,
they're also adding their lefty, a really good young pitcher, Tristan McKenzie. He hasn't played much this year. He's a potential ace. Cleveland's always got arms. So they're always going to kind of be hanging around.
Yeah.
Chicago, I think Chicago will probably sell, even though they're eight games out.
Seller.
You know, talk about a team
Cubs
that looks so good. It's kind of like San Diego.
Completely.
A team that
Completely.
Looks so good on paper.
100%.
For a team,
yep.
For a team that looks so good on paper, and now all of a sudden they've been reduced to what we've seen this year, 39-55.
They've been reduced to ashes, and they are definitely like a 2K, you know, primo lineup. Hey, look at Robert, Jimenez. Neither one of those guys can stay healthy. I mean, Lewis Robert got hurt in the home run derby. That guy's a world of talent. Jimenez, 6'6", switch hitter. Massive talent. He's never put it together. He's never stayed healthy for more than a month at a time. Those are two, you know, three and four hitters. And then a guy like Lance Lynn completely bottoms out. Giolito, these guys can give up 9-10 runs in two innings. There's no consistency. Tim Anderson, I think, just hit his first home run. Tim Anderson. I mean, talk about collective. Yeah, that's San Diego Midwest. Yeah, they're the same blueprint. Exactly. Completely, collectively underachieving. I mean, it's astonishing. Given the talent level, I mean, White Sox have a great lineup. Benintendi. I can name more and more. The White Sox have players. They just don't win close games.
Benintendi could
and
be
again,
a player.
I think it's that Machado style almost. Luis Robert apparently is really cocky. Moncada from the Red Sox.
Yeah.
He's apparently not a good teammate. He's partying till 7 a.m. every day and then showing up drunk trying to play. Moncada's a wreck. Jimenez cannot stay healthy. Like, they have so much talent, they just cannot put anything together. I would sell.
You know, Benintendi.
I'd build the farm. I would erase that style of player they've acquired lately. Do you know what I'm saying? I would literally rebuild for the next 4 years from the White Sox. I mean, it's not working in Chicago. They have so much talent.
Benintendi could be a player. Benintendi could be a player.
Oh, yeah.
That's option. Move.
Great asset. Yeah. Yeah, he's finally hitting leadoff. I mean, I thought La Russa was the problem, but, I mean, the White Sox just have terrible attitudes. There's something in the water in Chi-Town.
Yeah.
Now, going over to the West, obviously, Texas is going to be buyers. Houston, you know, they're 2.5 games back, but they're also in the wild card right now. I would expect that Houston will be buyers. Seattle,
definitely.
I don't know. They're 50-50 right now. I don't know if Seattle will necessarily be buyers or sellers.
I think they're buyers. Yeah. They have, I mean, George Kirby, Castillo, Logan Gilbert. They have serious arms. Seattle still can't score runs. I mean, it's nothing new. But also part of their stadium. But they're defensive,
true,
and their pitching is top. Their pitching and defense is top ranked. You know, those are the guys that are always in, like, the 3-2 games, the 2-1 games. Mariners just cannot score enough runs. That's been their problem for 5 years, since Griffey and Martinez and those guys. But I love their young staff. I think the Mariners are a legit, you know, a solid playoff team.
Oh, by the way, going back to Chicago for a second, look out for Lance Lynn potentially being a trade candidate, too.
Yeah.
The buffet table. Trade him for a buffet.
Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito. Matter of fact, I heard the Sox called on Giolito. So
no way.
That might be something to potentially look at.
Yeah, he's been hitting the buffet with Lynn. I mean, they both put on about, you know, freshman 40, but whatever. That's the point.
They've also called Kelly, too.
Yeah.
Joe Kelly, he of the Dodgers lore. Sure. Yeah.
Well, and Boston,
Chicago, they got a
pretty... known for beating the shit out of what's his face, the second baseman.
Ooh.
At one point for the Yankees a couple of years ago.
I love it.
Who tried to puff out his chest, go charging at Kelly, and then Kelly immediately throws like 4 bombs on him right as he hits the ground.
Yeah. Kelly's
yeah.
a legend. He is a good player, dude. He's pitching a lot better. He was injured for a while, but yeah, White Sox have some assets. It's just, that team just does not know how to win. Yeah, you're right, man. It's Padres in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Oakland, obviously Oakland is going to be sellers. Matter of fact, you know, the fans want the team to be sold. So
eternal sellers. Eternally sellers.
Yeah.
They just wake up every day of their life. They just wake up going, I'm a seller. I'm a seller. That's just all they do.
Matter of fact, let me double check. Is there one player on that team? I'm trying to think. A former guy that Boston had traded. I don't think he's over there. No, I think he's with Houston. Who am I thinking of?
Who are you talking about? Not Munson. You're talking about, I know who you're talking about, older utility guy. Plays around everywhere.
Yeah.
Houston player. He's like 30.
Hang on 1 second.
He's like 30 or 31.
Mauricio Dubon.
He's playing well now for Houston. He's playing really well for Houston right now, like B+, A-. He's playing better than Pena.
Yeah, I know that he was listed
yeah.
as a potential candidate for Boston to potentially target.
Nice player. And they might have an overlap with Pena at short too. So that might be a doable piece, a gettable a get.
Yeah.
Probably give up
right.
one of those prospects. But Dubon's maybe, I mean, dude, let's love him or hate him. Houston knows how to develop and draft players. Dubon's legit. He's another legit Houston bat.
Yeah.
I mean, they know how to play. They know how to draft. They know how to target play. Like, if you're playing, you know, first part of the order in Houston as a rookie or a second-year guy.
Going over to the NL East, Atlanta, obviously. They'll be buyers. Miami and Philly, I can see as buyers, especially now that Philly is back in the race for the wild card. Especially now with Miami, the type of season they're having, I would be shocked if they didn't buy.
They're currently in the wild card standing. But let's keep in mind, stating the obvious. I mean, they're always totally strapped. Miami does not spend money. I don't know how much buying they're going to be willing to do. Very good young team, though. As good a staff as anyone. All young arms. Miami's a completely dangerous team. They could win it all, possibly.
Potentially. And, you know, Philly, I can't really consider Philly out of it, considering the fact that they're only one game back of the wild card.
What do you guys think of
them? The Mets? Philly.
You guys like Philly? Not good.
I don't know if I see them. I don't know if I see them making the World Series again, though.
No.
No. I mean, look, let's do the math. I mean, they have an awesome lineup offensively. I just don't know about the defense pitching dynamic. Fun team, though. Plenty of power.
I mean, they got Matt Strom, I believe, as one of their starters. He's in the bullpen.
Nolan Wheeler. I mean, they have, I'd say, like B-minus on a good day for them as far as their starting.
Yeah, got Nola Wheeler, Walker.
Decent staff. Yeah, Walker's pitching great. Ex-Met, another just like Wheeler.
They have Suarez, but I don't know. I don't know if Suarez is back on
the main roster
or if he's still injured.
They have Suarez back, Philly, and then they also added Christopher Sanchez, who they got in one of the Devil Rays trades. This guy is apparently pretty good. He like just came up with the Dominican. So Sanchez is back.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Philly staff. You know, it's not going to, you know, no one's going to fall in love with the staff. That's the issue with them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no. I mean, problem is they have the talent. I just don't see them making that same run that they did last year.
I don't know if they had that. That was a pretty like tangible, like a magical, if you will. You know what I'm saying? Like very random. I don't know if you can achieve that again or expect that again.
No,
as a Phillies fan,
no.
that's once in a lifetime, like the song goes.
Right.
Same as it ever was.
Over
to
like me talking too much.
Over to the
same as it ever was.
In the NL Central, really the only two buyers I can see are Cincinnati and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
Milwaukee also getting back Brandon Woodruff, multiple All-Star. Burns has been kind of subpar for them by his standards, by our standards. If you're a, you know, Yankees or Mets or Red Sox fan, you'd love Burns, but he's been down this year. But I mean, they have two aces. When Woodruff comes back, if Burns pitches the way he should, I've never been in love with Milwaukee's lineup. I mean, that's kind of a paltry lineup. They have Yelich and Adams from the Rays. Couple other bats, but nothing to write home about. I mean, the Brewers, I don't think they have enough offense to really be a deep threat.
You know what's so weird? And I mean, granted, keep in mind this is a video game I'm talking about here, but I know, Alex, I know you've been, you've been talking about getting MLB The Show. When you get onto the game and you look at the Cincinnati Reds roster, you take a look at their overalls, and they have the overalls basically of a AAA lineup. And it makes you wonder, how the fuck are they on top of the NL Central?
I can talk about the Reds real quick. I mean, so I went to school at Ohio. Ohio wasn't in smaller school. But, you know, point being, not only with LeBron fans. This is back in, like, near 2000 when I was in school, back when life was cool. But, hey, whatever, besides the point. But, no, back then, the Reds literally – a lot of people that I met in college, fraternity, or playing lacrosse, like, there's a lot of Reds fans, just like Ohio State fans, blah, blah, blah. But the Reds, this Reds lineup now with Cruz, so this team, literally, this is the first team I've ever seen. I don't know if you guys can disagree here, if you do the math after this call. Like, this is the first team they've literally brought up four or five shortstops in a row. India was a shortstop, Matt McClain, shortstop, De La Cruz, shortstop. They have Noelvi Marte, who they got in the trade for Luis Castillo, Mariners. He's still in the minor leagues. The Reds literally have five or six of the best young hitters all coming in the lineup. Plus Spencer Steer. I mean, the Reds have, dude, out of nowhere. That's a limited payroll. They don't go out and sign big people.
No.
Right.
They're crushing those drafts and international signings. They're dominating. They're like Rays style. They're dominating right now.
I mean, what, their last big contract was what?
Aroldis Chapman, Griffey, Dunn. I've appreciated them through the years.
Votto, maybe?
Good friends. A couple of my good friends are like Joey Burrow, you know, Nixon, you know, Reds, Ohio fans. So I always watch the Reds here and there. I think they're a fun team to watch. But remember, they were big with – when they kind of started hitting that wall of old age and ineptitude – Yeah. Father Time's undefeated, right? But no, when they were when they were kind of coming down off the top, the highest they had achieved since like the actual Big Red Machine, which could be the best lineup of all time. That's a debate. But the Reds were the last time the Reds were almost relevant was when Griffey was just basically an old, you know, a shadow of what he used to be. And then Adam Dunn was 6'7", 300 pounds, you know, loafing around. Jay Bruce. I mean, the Reds are really excited. They probably I think they have the best young team, best young lineup. They need a little bit more pitching. But I mean, they've definitely
got momentum.
They got such a good lineup, dude. They play 13 or 14 guys, too. They go Rays. They platoon a lot. They have, like, four or five good bench pieces, too. It's amazing to see.
Right.
I mean, they were gutter for 4 or 5 years. They were in the alley. They came out of nowhere, too. Some of these, I mean, these guys they're bringing up are studs. Kudos to the scouts.
Here's what gets me, though. Here's what gets me. They're on top of the division, and they're a minus 10 when it comes to run differential.
Exactly. Yeah, and Central, look at the theme, ALNL. Central, kind of like the weakest, you know.
Yeah.
Tallest kid at a midget convention. But, like, they're all, like, it's all mired in mediocrity, like 500 quests. Everyone's kind of just, like, loafing around, winning, losing, winning. But, I mean, the Reds, I think out of those teams with the talent and the young momentum, I think they're definitely the favorite to win that division.
Oh, I definitely think so. If it's going to come down to either them or Milwaukee at this point.
St. Louis is dead.
No, I just don't. I don't see Chicago or Pittsburgh climbing back in it. Yeah. And St. Louis is far gone. So,
both fun teams, too. I really like the makeup, like blue collar. Like, again, no big payroll at all. Pittsburgh, I love a team like that. They're fun to root for. But, yeah, they're not going to make it this year. Yeah, St. Louis is dead, and then I think, like you said, I mean, Chicago, I think they're a year or two away. They're starting to get some good results from younger players like Justin Steele, but I don't think they're quite ready for the spotlight of the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're probably, for Chicago, you're probably going to see a lot of people get moved out in particular. Some of the names I've heard, for example, Cody Bellinger, I've heard get brought up. I've heard Mark Leiter Jr. has been brought up as a potential, candidate. There's, you know, Marcus Stroman could potentially get moved.
He's been one of the best arms this year. Total head case. I don't like him at all. He's kind of pissed me up when he's on the Mets, But, I mean, yeah, he's a hot commodity.
You know, there's quite a few people that could potentially get moved off of that list.
Stroman's valuable there because you have a ground ball pitcher, playoffs, a team like Boston, even a team like Tampa. You think about them. I mean, they hate to spend money, but they'll bite the bullet sometimes and do what they have to do. You know, they're a little cheap, but they're not stupid. So if they think it's, you know, cost effective, if it's going to make them better and not crush them financially, the Rays could be a team that would go out and get Stroman because they've lost McClanahan for a little bit. Shane Baz. I mean, dude, these guys are coming in and off with Tommy Johns. They're all like 20-game winners, potentially. The Rays sounds like a different plan. I haven't figured out the Rays front office. I think everyone in the world's trying to figure them out. They're just insane. They just wake up with like 5 new arms every day.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever you do, don't go out there and start cherry picking off of them, thinking that you're all of a sudden going to revive your franchise. Because, I mean, the Red Sox are a perfect example there. They get Heim Bloom thinking, oh, he's the best baseball mind ever, and now you see where the Red Sox are right now. So,
it comes down to the owner. Henry's been an absolute mockery, a shameful human being when it comes to representing a proud area of the world when it comes to sports and tradition and loyalty and huge sports, you know, mecca. And this guy's acting like he's a little Nintendo toy. I mean, he's giving them no respect. Yeah, the Sox could add 2 or 3 more rings. I'll always maintain that.
Yeah. And rounding out our trade deadline coverage here, NL West,
mm-hmm.
Honestly, it's probably going to be the Dodgers, Arizona, and San Francisco that you may see as buying. San Diego, more likely than not, will probably sell. and Colorado, if they even have any pieces, like maybe Daniel Bard or something, they'll probably sell anyways. But regardless of that, you know, I think pretty much where we're looking at the divisions right now, I think these are pretty much the site that we can probably expect to look at when the playoffs come around.
Yeah, it's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean that's honestly what it looks like to me, at least. But
it's shaping up. It's taking shape. It's kind of like it's showing you what it's about to be set up.
Yeah. Now looking over to the MLB draft. We go, because obviously, you know, we're talking about, you know, how smart general managers might be or whatnot. And just looking at the draft this year, where I'm only going to go through the names in the first round. You know, picks one and two were not really surprising. Pittsburgh taking the next Steven Strasburg and Paul Skenes from LSU. Not really a shock. I think if Skenes can stay healthy, he's probably going to be the next Steven Strasburg.
And maybe next year, kind of pushing it. But, I mean, within 2 years, he could be immediate impact.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. I think it's possible. Consider it helps that he went to college.
Next year.
It helps that he's not a high school arm and he's coming out of college.
Oh, he's ready.
So
he's ready. He needs reps.
Yeah.
He needs professional reps, but I mean, physically and mentally, he's ready. He just came off the world stage. You think LSU, the champion, you think he's scared? I mean, next year, Pirates have tantalizing talent. That'd be fun. I hope Keane comes up by next year. Bring him up next year. Let him be the new, you know, Garrett Cole Glass now. You know, Pirates need a good
Dylan Cruz, the only surprise here is that he didn't go number one because they were basically flip-flopping the entire week. Well, they were flip-flopping the entire week. You know, would it be Skenes or would it be
right.
Cruz that would go number one?
Yes.
So, I mean, it kind of makes sense that the Nationals, if they didn't get Skenes, they would then take Cruz. Yeah. I mean, he could be their next Bryce Harper, essentially.
Yeah. Pirates could have used him too, but, I mean, they have Reynolds. They have a couple other bats. Yeah. I heard Cruz could be another transcendent player.
Tigers taking Max Clark is kind of a surprise because I would have thought that they would have gone with Wyatt Langford out of Florida, who ended up going to Texas with the next pick. A lot of people had Langford as potentially the number one overall pick in the draft. So it comes as a bit of a surprise that, you know, this kind of makes me think that Detroit is going to go for an even longer rebuild than people think.
Yeah.
Because the fact that they're taking a kid out of high school basically just shows, you know, that he has more, you know, he has more development through, essentially.
Yeah.
Because if you're picking a high school
with their
kid,
limited cap, I would just Steve, I'd quickly say on Detroit though, from my perspective, I mean they have Keith, they have Colt Keith coming up, the middle infield I was talking about before, and then they also have Riley Green. They're probably taking best player available because I mean Detroit needs a lot of help. They're just like, all right, if he's a few years away, they're not winning anything in the next 2 years. So, but they could surprise some people in 2 or 3 years.
Well, in my opinion, though, the best player available would have been Wyatt Langford, not Max Clark.
Interesting.
At that
pick. Clark? What position?
Clark was an outfielder. He was taken with the number 3 overall pick. He was the Gatorade National Player of the Year this year.
Wow.
But Langford was a clear number one in many recent MLB draft MLB mock drafts. He was obviously overshadowed by the LSU combo of Cruz and Skenes, but he hit 373 this year with 21 homers for Florida.
Wow.
Legit. Yeah.
So it's kind of surprising. And plus, he had a strong performance with Team USA last summer, too. So it's kind of surprising that he didn't go in the top three. To me, at least. But number five, Minnesota took Walter Jenkins, an outfielder from South Brunswick, North Carolina High School. That kind of makes sense. You know, they're kind of set with the outfield right now, so they don't really need anybody right away to come up. So that kind of makes sense, but he is actually the consensus top high school player in the draft, apparently. Jenkins is.
Yeah.
And he was taken at, he fell to number five. So it kind of says something that even Detroit passed on him when yet, you know, it's the same exact position, but Jenkins was considered the consensus top high school player in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, lots of like big pedigree.
Yeah. Oakland, they took the son of former Pirates shortstop Jack Wilson in Jacob Wilson, who was a shortstop out of Grand Canyon. And actually, his father was his coach in high school.
Yeah, former major league player.
So, yep, yeah, exactly. A former major league player for the Pittsburgh Pirates. So, Oakland, I mean, they need a shit ton of people, let's be honest. So,
yeah.
I mean, the most popular position, especially out of high school, is shortstop. Because normally with high school shortstops, you can turn high school shortstops into basically any position in the majors. So,
the Cincinnati Reds have called up four shortstops playing all over the field.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's the point right there. You know, you can turn a high school shortstop and you can turn a high school shortstop into basically any position you want to.
Yeah, the hottest position, you know, the most versatile, the best position to learn. It can be applied to anywhere else.
Yeah. Cincinnati Reds, they took Rhett Lauder, a right-handed pitcher out of Wake Forest. Kansas City, they took Blake Mitchell, a catcher from Sinton, Texas High School. Now, this is kind of a surprise, considering he isn't the top catcher in the draft. That went to the Boston Red Sox when they took Kyle Teal with the 14th overall pick out of Virginia. Kyle Teal was actually ranked in the top seven of this year's draft.
Yeah.
And yet somehow he fell all the way to 14.
Wow.
So this is basically like when the Red Sox, when Meyer fell to the Red Sox a couple of years ago to number four. When Meyer in that draft was considered to be the best overall prospect. And he fell right into Boston's hands that year. And it's kind of the same thing here, but Teal isn't considered to be the best overall prospect, but he is considered to be the best catching prospect. And honestly, him working with Jason Baratek, he may be on the fast track for considering that Boston desperately needs catching help.
Yeah.
Let's see. What was that, Alex?
That's a good shooter to have. Baratek can show him the ropes. That's a great coach to have.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Especially with Baratek potentially becoming a head coach in the future, too.
Yeah.
Let's see. The Colorado Rockies, they took Chase Dollander, a right-handed pitcher out of Tennessee. He entered this season, believe it or not, as the top pitching prospect in this draft, before he got passed by Stennis. So he was considered at one point to be the top pitching prospect, and yet he fell to number 9.
Right.
Miami, they took Noble Meyer, a right-handed pitcher out of Jesuit Oregon High School. He's the clear top prep pitching prospect in the draft. So no-brainer there for Miami, as they want to get as many arms as they can.
Yeah, Marlins always just have a dispensary of arms. They always have arms.
Yeah. The Angels, they got Nolan Schanuel from Florida Atlantic, the first baseman. Honestly, that just goes to show that the Angels, you know, I'm kind of wondering if maybe they think that they can transition him over to third too, to be a replacement for Anthony Rendon once that monstrous contract is over. Arizona takes Tommy Troy, a third baseman out of Stanford, who quickly rose up draft boards after he had a strong summer last year, where he was named the best pro prospect in the Cape Cod League. And he had an uptick in power this year at Stanford, belting 17 home runs, which matched his total from the two previous seasons with Stanford combined. So almost as if he took steroids or something heading into his junior year.
His neighbor was Sammy Sosa, so they became close friends.
Yeah, the only thing he's missing is a corked bat. The Chicago Cubs, speaking of Sammy Sosa, they took Matt Shaw out of Maryland, which I know a lot of Red Sox fans were pissed about this because a lot of people looked at the Red Sox as potentially taking Matt Shaw, who was a local boy, who just happened to play at Maryland.
First round? Second round? First round?
First round.
Oh, wow.
One pick so, before
did
Boston.
Did the Sox pass him up or the Sox got beaten to it?
No, they got beat by one pick.
That sucks, man. I'm sorry to hear
Chicago,
that.
Yeah, Chicago took him, and a lot of Red Sox fans thought that it was probably going to be Matt Shaw if he fell to Boston, but pleasantly surprised that Kyle Teal.
Yeah.
They were surprised, though, that Kyle Teal fell to Boston, so...
You guys nailed that aspect of the draft. I mean, you know, let's be realistic, right? You're never going to get the guy you always – oh, the top player, very hard for luck to fall your way on draft night. There's so many different moving parts and, you know, musical chairs. There's a lot of uncertainty, so at least they got Keel. I mean, Keel's a really good pick.
Right. Right, yeah. And actually, it says here that he projects as a high-probability major leaguer. So,
yeah.
Ready to come. And with Connor Wong possessing more of a skill set of a backup catcher, that probably if his defense can develop, his hitting ability will allow him to move quickly through the Red Sox system. So, plus he has a plus throwing arm as well, aka don't run on Teal. The Chicago White Sox, they took Jacob Gonzalez, a shortstop out of Ole Miss. He won National Freshman of the Year honors back in 2021 on an Ole Miss team that made a surprising run to its first College World Series title back then. The San Francisco Giants, they took our first two-way prospect of this class, Bryce Eldridge, a first baseman and right-handed pitcher out of James Madison High School in Virginia. And from what it sounds like he wants to play both positions in the pros.
Yeah, he's got designs on that, and it's going to be interesting. Right now they've given them the green light, so all systems are go. I mean, they're going to let him try it out.
However, it does say, though, that his draft stock is slightly higher as a hitter as opposed to on the mound. So, but if they are going to give him the green light, then maybe he can develop into a successful two-way player. You know, I think it's a possibility.
Yeah.
We could see more two-way players in the future.
Yeah, and I think that's a great that's massive.
You think that'll happen?
For one for the league. No, I mean, you were saying more two-way players. I think that'd be a great blessing for the league. Ohtani's done it seamlessly. There's more guys. A lot of these guys pitched or were doing everything when they grew up. There's a lot more versatility than the league expects.
Yes.
And to what you were asking, Lou, I do think it's possible that we could see more pop up in the future because it's starting to become more of a thing now. Like, I mean, hell, there was I hate to go back to video games, but there was one year where MLB the show focused on, like, if you wanted to create your own player, they focused on having you be a two-way player. So, you know, it's what they're doing is they're basically putting it into young baseball players' minds, you know, coming up through high school and whatnot, that, you know, there does exist the potential to be a two-way player.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Baltimore Orioles, they took Enrique Bradfield Jr., a center fielder out of Vanderbilt, quite possibly the most electric player in this draft class. He stole 130 bases over his three seasons at Vanderbilt. And basically he has everything, but they say that his power will be the biggest question mark as a pro. But he has everything. He has defense. He has elite speed. He has contact. Yeah. The only problem will be his power.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
But this could be a pretty juggernaut pick for Baltimore if his power comes around as he turns pro. This could be another juggernaut type of pick for Baltimore, who is already fielding a young team as it is.
They have Matt Holliday's son in the minors, 18 years old, number one hitting prospect. He's waiting in the wings. They just called up Colton Callager, center fielder, top 15 prospect, and they also just added Gunnar Henderson. Yeah, I mean, Baltimore's making some big moves, dude. They have a really nice minor system coming up.
Plus, they have Heston Kjerstad down there, too, in AAA.
Great
expected to take the next step any day now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not to mention, they have their young catcher, Adley Rutschman, as well. So,
number one pick, yeah. I mean, you're talking Gunnar Henderson, then Holliday. This guy's apparently supposed to be the next, like, 330 hitter. So, Matt Holliday's son's going to probably be up next year or the year after. They already have three or four really good young players that they're pulling up
right
now. They're getting really good.
Yeah.
They need more pitching, but they got a really good lineup now. They're getting really young, too.
Yeah. Milwaukee, with the 18th pick, they take Brock Wilkin, a third baseman from Wake Forest. He ended up setting the ACC record for career home runs by bashing 71 home runs during his time at Wake Forest, including 31 this past spring. Looks like he could eventually move to first base, according to ESPN's scouting report here. And let's see, Tampa Bay, with the 19th pick, they take Braden Taylor, third baseman from TCU. And it looks like he will probably be at either second or third up in the majors, from what they're talking about here. The Toronto Blue Jays, they take Arjun Namala, a shortstop from Strawberry Crest High School out of Florida. Only 17 years old, so he's probably a long ways away. when it comes to development. But, however, it says he has ridiculous tools, and Kylie McDaniel says there's 30 home run potential in this kid.
Right.
And there's the possibility that he could develop into being the best player from this draft, whether as a shortstop or a power-hitting third baseman. However, there is also an enormous risk and a range of outcomes given the concern over his hitting. So, however, though, this kid does have potential, apparently, to be one of the best players, if not the best player from this draft, according to Kylie McDaniel.
Wow.
The St. Louis Cardinals, they take Chase Davis, a left fielder and right, or a corner outfielder, basically, a left fielder, right fielder, out of Arizona. Seattle, they take Cole Emerson, a shortstop from Glenn High School in Ohio. Cleveland, they take Ralphie Velasquez, a catcher from Huntington Beach, California. Atlanta, they go with Hurston Waldrop, a right-handed pitcher from Florida. San Diego, they take Dylan Head, a center fielder from Homewood Flossmoor High School out of Illinois. It sounds like he is an elite runner. So talk about speed on the base paths. That's somebody who is that's somebody who very well fits the San Diego Padres blueprint out there. The New York Yankees, they take George Lombard Jr., a shortstop from Gulliver Prep High School out of Florida. He's the son of George Lombard Sr., a former big league player who played six seasons in the majors and is currently the bench coach for the Tigers.
Yeah. But that thing sounds familiar.
Sounds like, though, he is not a lock to remain at shortstop, but the scouts love his makeup, and he just turned 18 in June. And basically, what it sounds like here, it sounds like that he is Josh he's probably going to be Josh Donaldson's replacement whenever they decide, whenever he develops perfectly. Because literally when they asked why the Yankees took him, they said, have you seen Josh Donaldson's batting average?
Yeah, it's also going to depend when the Yankees finally decide to wheel out the corpse known as Josh Donaldson. Yeah. Like that's been a punchline. For
yeah, essentially.
The black hole.
Essentially.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Phillies.
George is rolling in his grave, dude. Steinbrenner, you best believe that.
Yeah. The Philadelphia Phillies, they took Aiden Miller, a third baseman out of Mitchell High School in Florida. This is another kid that Boston was looking at. But they ultimately, you know, once Kyle Teal fell into their laps, he was too good to not take. So, but he does draw comparisons to Donaldson to Josh Donaldson for both his power swing and his ability to draw walks. Now we're talking prime Josh Donaldson, not past his prime Josh Donaldson. In terms of comparisons.
Yeah.
And it sounds like an injury to his hamate bone is what caused him to fall all the way to number 27.
His what bone?
Hamate, which I think it's a I think it's in the wrist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the hamate it's like the bone right below your ring finger.
Oh, sure.
It's the bone that connects your ring finger and your pinky.
The one
Houston takes Bryce Matthews, a shortstop out of Nebraska, which that's kind of surprising because don't they already have they already have what's his name at shortstop. So unless they're gonna switch him around,
you already said it before, bro. You already know that one of the best kept secrets in baseball. These guys always target shortstop. You can move them anywhere in the field.
Yeah, but normally if you target a shortstop, you target them out of high school.
Yeah, exactly. He can be a center fielder or a third baseman or a second baseman if he bulks up. I mean, that's the opening channel. That's the best defensive position, I think, to draft. I was saying before, the Reds, they drafted four guys in a row that have come up. The Reds have three guys in the running for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
All shortstops.
Right.
That's what I was saying. So it's like that. I guess that's the hot thing.
Right.
Now, in terms of the other first round picks, Seattle had a compensation pick for Julio Rodriguez, winning Rookie of the Year. Seattle, with the 29th pick, they took Johnny Farmello, a center fielder out of Westfield High School in Virginia. The competitive balance picks, Seattle then took Ty Pete, a shortstop out of Trinity Christian High School in Georgia. The Tampa Bay Rays, they took Adrian Santana, a shortstop out of Doral High School in Florida. The New York Mets, they took Colin Houck, a shortstop out of Parkview High School in Georgia. And their pick dropped 10 spots because they exceeded the competitive balance tax threshold by more than $40 million.
Sure. And if you quickly look at the list thus far, those are 50% probably shortstops. A lot of the names you're calling, shortstops.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and plus they're coming out of high school, so they could be stay at shortstop, but they could also switch elsewhere.
Yeah.
That's why I said earlier.
I always like some of the shrewdest, like best. I know the Rays not the best subject, but I bring it back to them a lot just because I respect them. They always start shortstops. BJ Upton, Carl Crawford, they're both shortstops. That's how they kind of started that trend. The Reds with Eric Davis. Eric Davis is a shortstop back in the day, almost after the Big Red Machine. A lot of the best hitters have started as shortstops and then gone to other Gold Glove careers, other positions.
Yeah. And, it's like I said before, shortstop out of high school in particular is usually the most popular pick because literally you can mold them into any type of player, any type of infielder, maybe switch them out to the outfield. Normally a high school shortstop, they possess usually all the tools to basically play anywhere.
Yeah. If you break it down to layman's terms, shortstop, it's like you're in a box almost. You have to cover ground. The quickness, athleticism, awareness. It's kind of like a leadership, quarterback style almost position. But like the athleticism, the range is huge, and the range and quickness plays anywhere on a diamond. Yeah, like the best defensive
and
team.
Also,
they're one of the recently. There's a lot of shortstops.
An interesting note on the New York Mets, them taking Colin Houck. Colin Houck was originally looked at as a top 15 prospect in this draft. And he fell all the way to 32.
Any idea why he dropped?
No idea. Does not say.
It's a little strange.
Somehow he fell.
The slots and stuff, it's kind of different than NBA where you just draft people. You have to negotiate before you even hear the guy's draft pick. MLB is a lot different.
Exactly. It's kind of funny you bring that up because the Red Sox, they took Nathan Zanatello in the second round, and the reason being is that originally Washington was going to take him with the 40th overall pick, the first second round pick, but the Red Sox offered to pay him over slot, which is not what the Washington Nationals were going to do. His agent told Washington he would not sign with them if they drafted him. So he ended up falling all the way to number 50 with Boston.
Boom. Bingo, you nailed it. Agents scare off, or representatives scare off prospective draftees, or sorry, drafters. So that Kansas City team, limited payroll, is hot shot, you know, five-star center fielder from Los Angeles. If the Royals draft him, he can go, no, no. And unless they absolutely blow it out of the water and go above their designated, whatever, draft threshold, it's so different, the finance and the MLB draft. I'm still learning it, but you know what I'm saying? People can just opt out. And then, oh, you know what? I'm going to go back to Georgia, or I'm going to play for Duke for a year, or UConn, or wherever. Yeah. Like, they can just get drafted. So it's a tricky, like, you have to know someone's very interested in you and joining your franchise before you draft them.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of funny because I'm looking at a lot of the players that the Red Sox drafted, and a lot of them so far have signed for under slot.
There you go.
And I'm not just talking under. I'm talking significantly under.
There you go on steroids. You know, I mean, that amplifies. You just proved it right there. I mean, if a player, a young prospect, is really excited about joining your team, they're going to go under slot. And sometimes the Pirates have been notorious, the Nationals recently, but the Pirates, the last 10 or 12 years, a couple different times, the Tigers have been burned in the draft. I mean, some players will not go to your city. So, I mean, it's a crapshoot. But less reliable than the other.
Yeah. So, looking at some of the other picks, just rounding out the first round here, Milwaukee, they take Josh Knopf, a right-handed pitcher from Petchogue, Medford High School out of New York. Minnesota, they take Charlie Soto, a right-handed pitcher out of Reborn Christian High School in Florida. Miami, they take Thomas White, a left-handed pitcher from Phillips Academy High School in Massachusetts. The Dodgers, they take Kendall George, a center fielder from Atascocita High School out of Texas, and their first-round pick dropped 10 spots because they exceeded the competitive balance tax threshold by more than 40 mil. Kevin McGonigal, a shortstop out of Monsignor Bonner High School out of Pennsylvania, went to Detroit at number 37. Cincinnati took Ty Floyd, a right-handed pitcher from LSU at 38. And Oakland rounds out the first round by taking Miles Naylor, a third baseman out of St. Joan of Arc High School out in Canada. And, yes, he is the youngest of the three Naylor brothers with Josh and Bo.
Well, of course.
Yep.
So, and That's basically the roundup of all of the Major League Baseball first round of the draft. And you know what? I'm looking right now, since we were talking about prospect pools, the Yankees, after the draft, have the 19th ranked prospect pool in all of Major League Baseball.
I heard.
Yeah.
They were previously ranked 24th.
Oof.
But now they're at 19. Let's see. Going over to you know what? We do have some NBA coverage. First off, we do have some new rules to talk about.
Yes, we do.
In the NBA. Two new rule changes were approved that officially begin with this upcoming season. First off, the league will now award the opposing team a technical free throw when a player is ruled to have flopped in attempt to draw a call. However, the new flopping penalty does not count toward the two technical fouls that lead to a player's ejection. So, in other words, a player cannot be ejected from a game for flopping.
The Harden.
It might be a flop.
James Harden.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, the James Harden rule, basically. Like you said, Alex.
Oh, yeah. Good for him.
And apparently they've been Apparently, they've been using it during the summer league too.
Yeah, the hard rule.
So it does say that it is being implemented on a one-year trial basis for this year. So assuming it goes well, it'll probably be made into a permanent rule next year.
Yeah.
However, in the meantime, coaches will receive a second replay challenge if their first challenge is successful. However, a timeout will be charged on the second challenge, even if that second challenge is successful.
Yeah.
So basically, we go from one challenge to two challenges, but only if the first challenge is successful. And if that first challenge is successful, you are not charged with a timeout, but you are charged with a timeout if the second one is successful.
Yeah.
Well, even if it isn't, you're still charged with a timeout, I think. But overall, you know, I think these rules, I mean, it makes sense, first off, to have two challenges instead of one. I never understood why. And I still don't understand that with hockey, why they only have one coach's challenge.
They don't want to abuse the opportunity, so they don't want people to the coaches to every chance to get. Oh, you know what? Let's look at that. They don't want to slow down the game, water down the game. So, but I agree with you. Two is a good number. One is two, not enough. One's not enough. Two's better. Two challenges, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about you know, abusing it when it comes to, but you know, there were multiple games this season, not just with Boston, but there were multiple games this season that could have benefited from having a second challenge for certain teams.
Definitely.
There were calls that were allowed because they had already used that first challenge.
That's the thing. If a coach prematurely uses that, you know, kind of botched up, fumbles that opportunity away, then in the fourth quarter something really crucial happens, they can't even react. So you really have to, they have to be very guarded about how they can use that. Who's a bit better?
Yeah, we've seen it happen in both the NHL as well as the NBA. So now, you know, with the NBA instituting this rule, you know, I think it's definitely a good thing for the NBA to have put this in.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
as far as the flopping rule goes, I believe also not only will the team get a technical free throw, but whatever team gets the technical free throw, they will also get possession after that.
Yeah, make it costly.
If I remember correctly.
The Harden Kardashian, you know, drama. We don't want that in the league. Spin it up. The Harden rule is in effect.
Yeah. So I mean, ultimately, I have no problem. I have no problem with these rules whatsoever.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Lou, on the new flopping rule, as well as the second coach's challenge?
Yeah, that might help out with the games, you know, because you know how they've been criticized for making bad calls and whatnot. So I think this second challenge, I think, is going to help, you know, diminish with the bad calls they're making. The flopping rule, well, you know, I mean, they've been pulling some stupid tricks, you know, with that. So, you know, the flopping rule, I think, is going to be a good thing. You know, they're trying to be so stupid with it. But then again, it could be a flop. Good boy.
Possibly. I mean, but you won't know until you actually put it in there, until you actually institute it, basically.
Right.
Well, what are your thoughts on it, Alex? The flopping rule as well as the second coach's challenge.
Yeah, the second coach's challenge, as you know, like we said before, a couple of those times were early on, because if you get burned, if you fail your opportunity, then they don't have another chance. So I think the two coaching calls, that's a great move by the NBA. I think the flopping rule, yeah, Harden, I used to hate. I don't like when people are going hard to the hoop and then one or two, like certain guys. They're like lazy and not even get their feet set. Just like, you know, floundering around on defense, then they'll flop. So yeah, I think the flop rule should be penalized. So I really like the hard rule. I gotta keep calling them that. We're making that a huge thing, the hard rule.
You know, it should be called the Harden rule, but because he's still embarrassing for Harden.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, but because he's in the league, because he's still in the league, I guess it'll become the Harden rule after he retires.
Kardashian rule. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll call it Harden rule later.
All right, so we go from rule changes now into the new NBA in-season tournament for the right to hoist the NBA Cup, as they call it. So, in particular, here's how it will go. The in-season tournament will tip off on Friday, November 3rd, culminate with the championship on Saturday, December 9th. The semifinals and the championship will both take place at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. The semifinals will be on the 7th of December. The in-season tournament will consist of two stages, group play and the knockout rounds. So the way group play goes is all 30 teams have been randomly drawn into groups of five within their conference based off of win-loss records from the 2022-2023 regular season. Beginning November 3rd and continuing through Tuesday, November 28th, each team will play four designated group play games on tournament nights, as they call them. One game against each opponent in its group with two games at home and two on the road. Then eight teams will advance to the knockout round. The team with the best standing in group play games in each of the six groups, and also two wild cards, which will be the team from each conference with the best record in group play games that finished second in their group. The knockout rounds will be single elimination games in the quarterfinals, which will be played in NBA team markets on Monday the 4th and Tuesday the 5th, the semifinals, and the championship. The qualifying teams will compete for a prize pool and the new in-season tournament trophy, the NBA Cup. All 67 games across both stages of the in-season tournament will count toward the regular season standings, except the championship game. Each team will continue to play 82 regular season games in the season, including those games that are part of group play and the knockout rounds. So the groups are as follows. In the West, for Group A, you have the Memphis Grizzlies, the Phoenix Suns, the L.A. Lakers, the Utah Jazz, and the Portland Trail Blazers. For Group B, you have the Denver Nuggets, the L.A. Clippers, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Dallas Mavericks, and the Houston Rockets. And in Group C, you have the Sacramento Kings, the Golden State Warriors, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and the San Antonio Spurs. Now, for the Eastern Conference, Group A, you have the Philadelphia 76ers, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Atlanta Hawks, the Indiana Pacers, and the Detroit Pistons. For Group B, you have the Milwaukee Bucks, the New York Knicks, the Miami Heat, the Washington Wizards, and the Charlotte Hornets. And for Group C, you have the Boston Celtics, the Brooklyn Nets, the Toronto Raptors, the Chicago Bulls, and the Orlando Magic. So basically how they did these is before the drawing, each team was placed into a pot based on its record from the prior regular season. In each conference, one team from each pot was randomly selected into each of the three groups in that conference. So, for example, pot number one, you had the teams with the three best prior season records in a conference. So, for example, the East, it would be Philly, Milwaukee, and Boston. In the West, it would be Memphis, Denver, and Sacramento. In pot number two, you had the teams with the fourth through sixth best regular season records. In pot number three, you had the teams with the seventh through ninth best regular season records, and so on and so forth. Pot four, 10 through 12, and pot 13, yeah. Or pot five, 13 through 15. So, and basically, you know, it expands further out here. But it sounds to me like this is all basically basketball's version of the FIFA World Cup.
Yeah. I don't like it one bit, actually, because there's no meaning to it. There's no significance. So it's a cash grab. Yeah, I mean, it looks really ridiculous. You have to stop mid-season for what? What is this? What does this mean? What does that mean if you win that, besides money? That's all it is.
Yeah, I believe the winning club, each player gets an extra $500,000, I think, for the winners.
Yeah.
For the runner-ups, I think it's like 4,000, or I think it's 400,000 or 300,000 per player. And it just goes down by the I think they award the top three or the top five teams, I forget, but I think it's the top three teams. But regardless, you know, I'm kind of in agreement. I don't really understand. I mean, yeah, granted, they do, the games do count towards the regular season record,
mm-hmm.
but. I mean, let me put it this way. They better not be having an all-star game throughout this whole thing. They better not be doing, like, some sort of all-star game as well.
Yeah. That'd be mockery. And that's the danger. I mean, what is this going to represent? What if someone blows out their knee or hurts their back or their neck or blows their ankle out? You know, Steph Curry or whoever. Jimmy Butler. There's
I mean, a whole lot of, I guess, you know, this is their way.
Yeah,
I guess this is their way of changing the regular formula that they've done, you know, where they have, you know how you have divisional player or divisional teams face off against each other a certain amount of times every year.
Yeah.
I guess this is their way. This is their way of kind of mixing things up, I guess, so to speak.
Yes.
So they decided to make a tournament out of it?
It's going to be ridiculous, I think. There's no way. I mean, these coaches want to play their best players in this? Jokic?
I assume they probably will.
What if Joker gets injured? That's a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Like, ridiculous. Yeah. This is a laughable idea, isn't it? To play, like, a in-game, in-season tournament? Sorry, it's not the same, you know, footy, you know, over the pond. Soccer, you know, is different. I think I like the original. Like that format, but I don't think it's going to work in NBA standard.
Probably not.
What are your thoughts on this, Lou?
I think it's a stupid idea. You know, I mean, it doesn't mean anything. You know, playing a tournament style in the regular season. So what are you going to do next? Have a mid-season World Series, a mid-season Super Bowl. I mean, it's going to take all the meaning of a championship game. So do you really need this? No.
You know what would be very interesting, what would be very enticing, is if there was draft compensation attached to it.
You know, I think it just might be.
Extra first-round pick for the two finalists get an extra first-round pick.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Right. Not only do they get an extra first-round pick, but if they get if their pick is included, like, say you get included in the lottery draw or something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, I think if you add a little bit of vinegar, a little bit of spice there, it make the pot a little sweeter for someone to actually chase. NBA front offices, yeah. I mean, if you're chasing draft capital, where you can get a draft pick, then that makes it look more legit. I mean, right now it's a game one tour. You know, I need to see the professor, Mac McGlung. You know, I'm not like watching for an N1 tour like midseason tournament. Right now, it's, you know,
oh, better. Yeah, I'll throw one on top. Not only will you get an extra first round pick, you'll get an extra second round pick too.
Yeah, that makes it worth it.
So basically, you would have basically two seasons worth of picks in one draft.
Yeah, I mean
by winning this tournament,
that ups the ante. Yeah, because right now I wouldn't even know if Spoelstra doesn't want to play Bam or Jimmy Butler in a in season tournament. What if someone gets injured?
Yeah,
right. They just might not even play the best players. It might be a total flop. Weird idea.
I mean, you got to make this worthwhile, unless they're going to do something like, oh, we'll turn this basically into another version of the summer league, where you can have your players that may not get necessarily a lot of playing time during the regular year, and have them play. Like, say for example, the Boston Celtics. Like, you have a player like Sam Hauser, who sees sporadic playing time while on the main roster. Okay, you know, you can use this tournament to. I mean, let's keep in mind every team also has. A G League affiliate. So you can call up some players from the G League. You can put them in this tournament lineup while also putting in, like, say for Boston, you could have your two-way players in J.D. Davison and Jay Scrubb, who they just signed today. You could put in Peyton Pritchard. You could put in Luke Kornet. You could put in Jordan Walsh. Justin Champagne, Ashay Brissett, you know, you could put in those players that probably could benefit from seeing more playing time into this tournament. And you could do that basically with every team. And that way it saves you from potentially losing a big star like a Jason Tatum or a Jaylen Brown or, you know, a Kristaps Porzingis or, you know, so on and so forth. It would be better if this in-season tournament was like a prospect tournament.
Yeah. I mean, right down, there's no line of the sand, though. There's no official title on how people should approach it, though. So I don't even know. I mean, if I'm a coach, I'm not starting the best players in this thing. I'm protecting my players. I'm sitting them out. I'm doing the load management like Clipperland, Mr. Ballmer.
There is a possibility maybe not everything was revealed. I'm wondering if there's something extra that wasn't revealed because why else would players be motivated to actually participate in this tournament?
It's going to be a total flop. They have nothing else to offer. I mean, yeah, we'll see what they do. I think it's going to be a total flop.
Honestly, I look at it like this. You know, it doesn't really sound like a tournament at all because these games are technically going to count towards the regular season record. So basically it's basically a way of making a more interesting regular season by putting up different matchups. That's all that is.
Yeah, it's all smoke. I mean, there's nothing legit to that. It's it's not going to be a – there's no finality to it. There's no significance. It's like a mid-season tournament. I don't know. I don't think it's going to catch on at all.
Well, I mean, they do that with the college, you know. I mean, they have the preseason NITs and that stuff too. So, and they do count their game, and they do count those games toward their standings as well, even though they only care about conference play.
Yeah,
but they have done that.
I mean, I kind of think that they should really, because let's face it, you know, players. They don't even want to there's a belief that not a lot of players even want to go to the All-Star game. That,
right.
You know, they would rather have the ability to have that extra rest than play in the All-Star game, because the All-Star game is meaningless. And technically,
right.
It's the same thing here. It's the same thing here, you know, with this new in-season tournament. I mean,
yes.
Who knows? I guess their plan, from what I read, their plan is to generate the same type of buzz that the NCAA does with March Madness.
Okay.
So if they're going to generate that type of buzz, I'm expecting that there will be rule changes specifically for this tournament.
Yeah.
I want to see rule changes. For this tournament.
Because yeah. As constructed, I'm not believing that. Yeah, there has to be something else going on. I mean, this is not a really marketable thing.
Like, if you're going to do something, then if you're going to do something like this, then make some sort of rule changes that are specifically for the tournament, and then once the tournament's over, you go back to the regular rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Silver stuff. Silver's really taking a gamble here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I understand they want to try and market themselves. They want to try and, you know, market the NBA towards a younger audience. But I guess I don't know.
This would never work.
Hockey
would never do that. NFL would never do that. It's a very weird.
No.
Although hockey
is trying to do, their own version of the World Baseball Classic, though. So they are attempting that.
That would be actually cool if they did that.
So hockey is actually trying something like that. I mean, basketball already has that with FIBA and whatnot. So,
well, they've had the World Cup.
I know
before.
Hockey is trying. What was that, Luke?
The in hockey, they did have a few editions of their version of the World Cup.
Yeah,
but it didn't really stick though.
Yeah, I know. It hasn't grabbed the same attention as the FIBA Basketball Cup and the World Cup, so and even the World Classic for that matter, the World Baseball Classic for that matter. So,
because they've basically made it to where teams can refuse to have their players play. It's like, for example, the tournaments that we see in hockey now are basically just for under 18 or under 20 type of tournaments,
yeah.
For primarily prospects, like the World Juniors, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's all we have for hockey right now. But my understanding is they're trying to create their own version of the World Baseball Classic, which will take place before the start of every hockey season. Kind of like what World Baseball Classic does it wouldn't start before every hockey season, but there would be like an extended break. You know how they do for the NHL All-Star Game or what they would do for the Olympics, where they would have like a 2 to 3 week break or something?
Oh, yeah. They did a little
That's basically. basically what they're planning with hockey right now, what they're trying to plan out.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you know, I talked about Detroit earlier. Detroit is about to shut out Seattle right now 6-0. So
yeah. Seattle cannot
don't
go
count
run.
Out.
Who runs last night?
Don't count Detroit. Out Detroit.
No. Just, Mariners can't score runs.
No.
Rodriguez has been disappointing still overall. I mean, he's hitting like 230, not accessible. Maybe 240, 250. He should be 300.
Right. Yeah, but don't count out Detroit. With them, they could potentially sneak through. Oh, we do have the Astros apparently did. It looks like the Astros did sign their first round pick. So that just came over the wire. I believe that may have been one of the first round picks that have gotten signed so far.
Oh.
Let's see.
Well, the Mets are going to sell. They've already lost 2 of 3. They're selling.
Jesus. Yeah. It's like I said, not in Sports Whispers, actually. It was on your wall, Alex. I told you that as soon as they lost DeGrom, they basically lost their entire identity.
Their
like
soul.
They lost their leadership. So
yeah,
there's no turning the season around for the Mets.
No. No. I think they should sell. Get something back. You know, they got to build the arms. You can't sign two 40-year-old pitchers, Scherzer and Verlander. You can't focus on the back of the baseball cards. You know, you got to grow your own talent.
Right.
I mean, signing 240-plus guys, come on. It's not going to work.
Yeah. And by the way, for the Yankees, nice job hiring Aaron Boone's buddy as your hitting coach, Sean Casey. For any Yankee fans who want Aaron Boone to go away, he won't be going away anytime soon, not with his buddy joining them now.
He just got his buddy. Yeah. Boone's protected now. Horrendous.
Yeah. That signing right there basically tells me that Aaron Boone isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So if anybody's looking for them to part ways with Aaron Boone, it ain't going to happen.
No.
Learn to love the man.
And, by the way, this is actually the first coaching position for Sean Casey in the majors.
Yeah,
he hasn't even coached before in the majors. So,
and also keeps the heat up Cashman. Cashman and Boone are all
right.
They did that to quiet down some people. He's not going to change a damn thing. Hitting coach, come on.
Yeah, no. Needless to say, you know, it's going to take a lot more for the Yankees to turn things around. And in particular, I'll tell you right now, they could have done a lot better than Sean Casey as their hitting coach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's almost like they want to prove that Aaron Boone is going nowhere. So in doing so, they basically hired his best friend.
Well, I mean, he's literally going nowhere, so that's kind of fitting. They're languishing. They're going nowhere. That's a wild card game. They're not going to win a ring with Aaron Boone.
No.
It is what it is.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I feel bad. Yeah. I feel bad for Yankee fans, but, I mean, you know, how could you squander such a huge opportunity that the Yankees had a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the simple answer: having Aaron Boone as your head, as your coach. But anyways, That's going to do it for
tonight's
show.
Where's the logic in that?
yeah, exactly. I do want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. Thank you to Lou. Thank you to Alex, Diane, and Kyle for joining me tonight. We'll be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. And as a reminder for Big Brother fans, stay tuned to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE for updates on the first Big Brother podcast that will be coming up at some point late July, maybe early August, depending on what the cast reveal situation is. But anyways, everybody have a great rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly.
Great job. Thank you.
Yep. Everybody have a good one.